know that sound. Get fired up. Oh, the State of Combat podcast returns on CBS Sports, and it's back with a bang. It's backed, of course, it's backed and underwritten by that performance-enhancing audio. We don't know all that, but we are back with the MMA edition this week. Our buddy Old Andy is back.
I back. Trust me, I back.
So is this damn program following UFC 234, a wild card down under. We didn't get all the thunder. We didn't catch all that smoke we were intended on. Got a very interesting main event with some spin-off possibilities and another loaded show this week. Hey, you know what the deal is. You like this show. You know, you're hip to the show. You may want to tell some people about it. You may want to pay that forward.
If you see something, say something.
Please head on over to Apple Podcasts or wherever you consume fine audio. Give us that five-star review. Tell us what you like about the show. Tell us what you don't like. Now, keep that part to yourself. Just tell us. Tell us that you are listening. We're going to recap all things UFC 234 and preview what's really a loaded weekend inside the fisticuffs, inside that damn cage. We got two Bellator cards this weekend, including that must-see MVP blockbuster in the welterweight Grand Prix tournament against Paul Semtex Daly. And not only are we going to break down this MVP Paul Daly matchup at excruciating detail, hey, we're going to talk to both colorful participants ahead of this amazing Bellator fight this weekend on DAZN. So get fired up for that. We got the debut UFC on ESPN card Sunday night with a heavyweight bout that's going to bang. Cain Velasquez against Francis Ngannou. We also have the starting left tackle on the 2008 Boca High North state champions, number 65 in your scorebook, but number one in your heart, CBS Sports. He's a writer, editor, Brandon Wise. Wise man, how are you on this fine week here? I'm in L.A. You're in Fort Lauderdale. Let's do this.
BC, I feel as washed as you are in real life today because I've been on a weekend bender almost of doing a lot of drinking, hanging out with family and friends, trying to, you know, enjoy life. Be like you. Just enjoy every day as much as you can. And I'm hurting today.
Wow.
But I am not hurting as much as Robert Whittaker is, apparently.
And not as much as my back is. I broke my back, folks. I'm old. I'm 40. Robert Whittaker definitely hurting. He's got an exploding bowel. More on that to come. Hey, we've also got a third voice sitting in on the show this week, a fine producer at CBS Sports, a rabid MMA fan, a guy I've known since his teenage days in the ESPN newsrooms throwing spitballs against the bathroom wall, the great Mikey Mormile, sitting in this week, producing us this show, helping us out. Broski, welcome.
It is an honor to be here, guys. Thank you for the opportunity.
That's what I'm talking about. A lot of people don't know my former mentor, the late, great Anthony Mormile, Mikey's dad, the founder of ESPN MMA Live back in the day with Karen Portley. Mikey got to – you were like all over back then. You were like at Lesnar – which one were you at? Lesnar-Mir 2?
Was that Lesnar-Mir 2? I basically went to every good UFC event from like 2008 to 2013 pretty much. That's crazy. That's UFC 100, UFC 101, UFC 87, UFC 113.
Wow.
And then the closer ones, 200, 205.
Not a bad teenage life for Mikey, but he's all grown up now. We're going to have all those things promised on this show right after this. A word from our friends and sponsors.
Let's go!
It's the most all-star studded challenge ever. And this time, it's every competitor for themselves.
Best challenge ever!
The Challenge All-Stars. New season now streaming on Paramount Plus. Go to ParamountPlus.com to try it free. Terms apply.
The chilling new original docuseries on Paramount Plus.
Why did he kill his family? The answer lies across the ocean and a woman named Sylvie.
She's a CAN model.
Where desire leads to deception.
I ended up spending $12,000 and $15,000 a day.
It was addictive.
I can't get you out.
And obsession leads to murder.
Who did this to your family?
You can't really maintain a fantasy forever.
Control Alt Desire. Now streaming on Paramount Plus.
And we're back, broskies. We got a lot to get into. A lot of news came out from Australia, but this was unfortunately par for the course over the past year of the kind of last minute things we're seeing. It wasn't a weight violation this time around, but UFC 234 in Melbourne, as the Aussies like to say, saw the home king, Robert Whittaker, the middleweight champion, pull out the morning of, really 3, 4, 5 hours before the card. Due to a hernia in his abdomen, he had surgery pretty much immediately. He was vomiting overnight. Turns out, what is this, Brandon Wise? I mean, I had Taco Bell last night, so I think I had this morning. Exploding bowel? What was this? What are we calling this?
A collapsed bowel, not an exploding bowel. He posted it on his Instagram today or last night to let people know what was going on with his health conditions, give more insight, because he had a collapsed bowel that led to a herniated disc, I think it was, in his intestines. All of it just sounds really bad and like stuff that should have been probably checked before he got this close to the fight. But yeah, I really hope he gets right, gets healthy, because Robert Whittaker, man, he has such potential to be a star for them in Australia and in that part of the world. But if he can't be healthy, it's a little bit scary, just because you never know with him at this point, right? Like, he can have this kind of event happen where 4 hours before it's like, oh no, I'm hurt, I can't do this.
The worst thing for a 28-year-old guy in his prime that's already in the middle of that pound for pound top 10 that was supposed to get his pay-per-view A-side close-up here headlining in his home country, the worst thing is to get that injury-prone tag, considering went 10 hellacious rounds with Yoel Romero, the reptilian, the guy who's not human, and was so battle-tested, missed 11 months after the first one, 8 months after the second fight with hand surgery, and now he misses this opportunity, and it unfortunately threw a weird curveball into what had been perfect booking. We said that last week coming in. Two sexy-ass middleweight bouts that was going to produce a must-see fight of some kind to spin off. Now we have a bottleneck coming off of this. Can we just say best of luck to Robert Whittaker? I hope he bounces back. Or do you, Brandon Wise, have concern about this man's health? I mean, what's going on here?
This almost feels like a situation where you might need to take the belt off of him, right?
Because no interims, we don't need this. What?
But it's just like, what do you do? Like, what if he's out 2 to 3 months now and he hasn't fought since June, like you said, against Yoel Romero? I don't know what to do. Like you said, there is now a bottleneck. Kelvin Gastelum needs a fight, even though, like we said last week, he probably didn't deserve the opportunity he was getting. But he was walking around with a damn belt acting like he was a champion.
How genius was that marketing choice? Whoever was that, is he an Ali Abdelaziz guy? Yes, he is.
You're damn right he is.
And what, did they borrow the belt from Henry Cejudo?
From Henry Cejudo.
And
Henry Cejudo, I think it was a Henry Cejudo and Ali job where they were kind of like, hey, you should definitely just take this belt and go start telling people you're the champ.
Man, Ali is straight gangster. I love me some Ali.
Ghetto man, and he fights in a ghetto way.
Do you see that picture I sent you of his Instagram shirtless there rolling around? This guy, he'll kill you.
I don't want to talk about Ali anymore. He's just such a weird dude and so slimy
people
as it is.
Trying to poison him, okay? Just respect the man. Anyway, smart move by Gastelum. Yes, going to a backstage scrum, acting like he's the champion, saying I won by forfeit. All that was genius. It kept his name in the headlines. But yeah, we have a little bit of problem here. Hopefully the problem isn't Whitaker's health. Hopefully you can rebook Whittaker Gastelum soon. But should you? Because that wasn't the main event this time around. It was Israel Adesanya. We got a lot to talk about in how he defeated Anderson Silva, and we will in a minute. But let's jump the gun here. What do you do next? What do you do next?
With Robert Whittaker?
With this title.
I have a quick question before, real fast.
Bring it.
How we've had so many problems with these past cards, like you were saying early this year, people pulling out while they're missing weight and stuff. How do you not have that fight? How do you not have Israel Adesanya set up as that second fight where if something were to happen to Whittaker or Gastelum, that he steps in and you say, hey, Anderson, you're going to fight someone like Sam Alvey or someone else on the card so that you don't completely eliminate that. And then maybe you get Adesanya versus Gastelum for an interim belt or just a number one contender matchup.
I think that's fair, but I think it came down to the problem was the champion was the guy who was hurt, and you had Anderson Silva who worked so hard for this comeback opportunity, and it happened after the weigh-in, so they weren't able to bring in a last-minute opponent. It seemed like it could have just made sense, like you said, go Israel Gastelum in the main event. I guess you could make a fake interim title and just say, Anderson, stay in the gym. We'll get you something better, but I don't know. Maybe it was the right move to not break glass and panic on that. What do you think, Wise?
I think it's one is that, and two is there weren't any other middleweights on the card to fill in. Like the Sam Alvey fight, he was at light heavyweight. So that wouldn't seem fair to Anderson to make him fight a light heavyweight when he's been cut. He already cut down to 185 the day before. I think that there was also too many guarantees. Like we talked about last week, Dana White guaranteed Anderson Silva a title shot if he won against Israel Adesanya. And Israel Adesanya was saying the same thing, that he was going to get a title shot if he beat Anderson Silva. So it's like, you're going to kill off one of those guys' guarantees that you made, which is also going to hurt them financially, just to make a quick fix because of a freak injury that could not have predicted, is what Dana says. I think the way they handled it was the best way. I think just put Gastelum back on the shelf for a minute and let Israel and Anderson take the main event. I don't think there was a need when we found out this news at what, 3 o'clock in the afternoon our time, and the fight card was at 10. So I don't think that anybody would have taken that decision, by the way, to fight somebody else on 7 hours notice when you have zero time to prep or plan for anything. I think that this was as good a scenario as they could have envisioned.
I mean, they got lucky for what was really a bad card on paper. Really one of the worst pay-per-views on paper, to have a co-main event this sexy with this money matchup. So probably really the decision probably came down to the fact that most of this card, yeah, in Australia people bought it for Whitaker, but the American pay-per-view buys are going to be because of Anderson Silva being in such a high-profile, dangerous title fight. You take that scenario away from him, you probably lost whatever remaining pay-per-view buys there were. But it remains to be seen, is Israel going to get Gastelum next? Is Israel going to just leap the pack and get Whitaker next? Is Whitaker not going to be around for a while? That's sort of, we don't know what's going to happen, but let's break down what we actually saw in this main event. Look, we feared for Anderson Silva's life. He didn't seem to on our interview in the podcast with him last week. Yet when he entered that cage, tell me if I'm wrong, fellas, I saw some legitimate fear, would be the wrong word, but nerves and concern, knowing the danger of what he's into. When he came into that cage, I was less confident that this was going to end good. Yet, man, did he touch our nostalgic feel hole and put forth a sort of whatever was left in that jug. He poured it out on that canvas there in Melbourne and gave us a fun-ass fight out of stubbornness, out of just refusal to be a splat of blood on that canvas. I love me some old man athlete pulling something out of his ass that he shouldn't, and this very much had the feel of that.
So you're saying you felt the nerves going into it for Anderson?
I thought he looked nervous. I thought he looked like, this is dangerous. Here's the thing. You know what was wrong with Anderson the last few years? He was washed and he didn't know it. So when he's going into fights against Bisping and Derek Brunson, which is a fight they shouldn't have even done, they just used Anderson's name to try to sell that awful home to Randomie card in Brooklyn. I think Anderson didn't have the care, the fear of danger, the maybe extra time put in the gym to make sure that he's Anderson Silva. I think he was roll out the balls Anderson Silva. Oh, I'll figure it out when I get there. Like, yeah, I'll fight Cormier on 2 hours notice, even though I'm not even close to that weight. Oh, Anderson Silva, bro, I'll figure it out when I get there. The reason why Anderson Silva was so fun to watch on Saturday night and so surprising at 43 that he can do that wise is because he didn't just rely on being Anderson Silva. He worked for this. He went back to the gym. He treated this fight like the biggest and most dangerous of his career. And I saw a man with nerves entering there, a man who was rightfully taking it serious, and we got the best of what was left of Anderson Silva, and damn, it was fun to watch, and it was pretty damn good.
I will agree with that. However, I will say I thought Israel Adesanya showed more nerves than we expected from him, because we expected him to just come out there and roll through it, right? I thought he was the one who was tentative, who was unsure of himself at first. He went in there looking for those flurries, but I think that he kind of knew at some point, like, okay, I hit him pretty clean, and Anderson's not going away. So I think he backed off his game plan a little bit and just didn't force the issue, because that was what we talked about last week, was, is he going to feel, like, worried for his mentor and his idol that he watched growing up in the sport? Is he going to feel weird about trying to fight him and putting him out like that? I thought that he did. I thought it seemed in those first and third rounds like, he didn't want to do that. He wanted to just outpoint him.
So you thought he had compassion, and if you're going to believe that, you look back to Friday's weigh-in, when Anderson Silva in that post-interview gave an incredibly emotional. I mean, look, you saw how much it meant to him to be back here at 43. If there's one thing you're going to take from my interview with him last week on our podcast, on our bonus pod, it was that he's so damn happy to be here at 43 following that leg getting snapped in half when Weidman didn't beat him. Anderson lost. Let's just get that straight. But he's so damn happy to be back in this spot, like pure joy. And I just lost my train of thought. Where are we going there?
Man, he was happy to be in the fight, and that he was just happy to get into the ring.
So if you're going to believe that, then you saw his weigh-in speech, and he teared up, and then Israel gets caught in that. And Israel admitted Anderson's trying to, you know, you saw Anderson get the selfie during that UFC Unleash, or whatever you call that, the pre-fight documentary embedded thing. And embedded in, I think that he said the right things. And if you're going to think he showed too much compassion in rounds one and three, you're going to look back to when he's fighting back tears at that weigh-in. But I don't believe that. I believe round two, Anderson Silva turned back the damn clock, clean, effective counterpunching, and I think he surprised Adesanya by, after landing a couple clean shots, he got on his bike. He looked like Aldo just last week, right? When Aldo had Moicano hurt, he rushed him like it was WEC Aldo. We're like, whoa. Anderson tried that a few times in round two. And I think Adesanya said this to himself: I can win this on distance activity alone. Because one thing about 43-year-old Anderson Silva, same thing about 39-year-old Anderson Silva, not going to fight the full 5 minutes. It hurt him on the cards against Bisping, even though I think he should have beat him there. And I think Adesanya said, I'm not going to be this guy's cherry on top. I'm not going to get caught by something ridiculous and stunt my growth and ruin my rise right now. I'm going to play it safe. You think it's compassion-wise. I think he bought into the danger of who Silva is. He remembers that kick Daniel Cormier ate in the gut there in round three at UFC 200. And we all went, whoa, Andy. Whoa, he back, brother. I don't know if it was I'm trying to be a nice guy and protect here.
But you think that he still has that power? Like, how, if you're Israel Adesanya and you're in this fight and you've thrown pretty well in the first round and you're landing and you can clearly see, like you just said, Anderson can't go the full 5 minutes. Like, he clearly, after that rush that he had at Izzy in the second, he clearly needed a minute to recoup and recover.
He needed all of
recover.
Round three to regroup wise. Let's be honest. I think he won round two. He didn't have a lot left to win round three.
So if he's got that much going, like he can only do it in 15 to 20 second bursts, you're really worried about that guy coming at you with a counter strike and just knocking you out? That seems a little weird to me. I just think that
Mike, you jump in here. You're still Anderson Silva, bro. He'll still highlight KO you.
That was what I was going to come in with. Is still Anderson Silva, and those quick blitzes with him. I don't think Adesanya has really fought anyone with Anderson's striking level at this point in his life, even at his point now at this age. And you always see these counter punchers fight each other, and you see ugly matchups all the time. So I just chalk it up as like a great stylistic matchup where these two strikers, maybe once in a generation, are in there together, and they have to be careful with whatever they're doing. Granted, Anderson's old, but the striking, he still has those punches, those kicks. Like you said, he landed on Cormier. You don't know if he lands that on Adesanya, if it hits the right spot, if it's done, if he's curled over. So I chalk it up as a good matchup.
Yeah, but at the same time, they're both natural counter strikers, which is like the reason Israel is so affectionate to him, is because, like I said, he was his idol growing up. He made his game after him, and he's trying to make it better. I don't know. I was a little bit iffy on the Israel performance. I thought he was way too cautious with it, with Anderson, because it was a star-making moment. After everything that happens 8 hours beforehand, you get to headline the pay-per-view against your idol in front of mostly your fans. They might have been cheering for Anderson Silva, but those are people that are there supporting you from New Zealand and Australia. And you didn't go in for the kill.
Now,
that
I'll
makes
agree with
me,
you in that. I'll agree with
that
you.
Makes me, that. Yeah, that makes me a little questionable about what we think about in Israel Adesanya going forward. It's like, does he have that killer instinct to just go and go for the knockout? And will that make him a star if he's out here doing these point matchups where he's worried about getting knocked out or catching that one punch that might be the one that ends him?
Well, here's the thing. Whether you believe it was compassion, not wanting to be the villain, not wanting to kill his idol, or whether you believe more on my side that he tasted enough in round two. And by the way, let's not forget, he got rocked twice in round two on counter shots. We're like, whoa. And maybe he played it safe. Either way, he took a step back in terms of his stock. This was the ultimate rub opportunity. No, nobody gets this type of opportunity, right? The ultimate rub to fight Anderson Silva in a pay-per-view co-main in your home area to get a chance to end him and then get his fans and get that push. And we said, best case scenario for all of us was that Silva goes the distance and we talk about his balls and that he had one more good effort, but that Adesanya kind of dominates. And in the end, I think Adesanya had warning track power out there. And I don't necessarily mean in his punching power. I mean in his performance and his killer instinct and all of that. Third round, Anderson did not have the stamina left. He was almost giving Adesanya a chance to beat him by doing that stupid drop your hands Ricardo Mayorga stuff that we saw that led to the knockout against Chris Weidman the first time around. Don't do that crap, Andy, all right? Do that against a feather fist guy. Don't do that against a killer like Adesanya. I get, again, what he's doing. And Adesanya, I think, got what Anderson was doing. And I think that's why, even though Adesanya lit him up with some combinations, didn't step in because this is what Anderson wants you to do so he can counter big. But if you're Anderson, if you would have lost Weidman style on that, get off. F you. Like, F, get out of here.
When Anderson Silva walks into a room, you could hear a rat piss on cotton.
I would have pissed on the rat pissing on cotton because I would have been that upset. Like, don't do that crap. But he was gassed in round three. So you're right. Adesanya should have stepped on the, on, Adesanya should have finished strong and he didn't. And I think that's why he looked disappointed. He did the right thing. The baby face bow down. Tell your legend you love him. Kiss the ring and get out of here. But you were not the last style bender. You were just another bender.
Go ahead, Mark.
No, you start off.
I was going to just say, though, I thought that Anderson gave him two opportunities in that third round. Though that was, to me, I told you this off air. I thought when he called him into the corner when Israel was, like, trying to get him back into the middle, he kept pointing, no, come here, come here.
Stephen Bonner move, only this ain't Stephen Bonner.
But I thought that was Anderson saying, hey, young buck, you want to win this fight? You want to put me out? You're going to put me out in this corner right now.
Oh, like go out on my sword? Like I'm going to give you the chance to finish me? Take my rub? Take the spirit and soul out of my chest and insert it into your veins? Here's your chance, kid. And the kid didn't have the balls. That's what you're saying, Wise.
Yes. That's what I thought. It felt like because Israel was like, all right, I'll play your game for a second. He went in for a punch and then backed out again. And Anderson's like, no, come here. And then Israel was like, nope, I'm going to the middle. You come find me. That's where it was just kind of like, Israel, you want to play his game. You want to be like him and do those kinds of things in the ring. You better go in there and do it with him. You can't just be like, no, we're going to do this my way. You got to play his game if you want to get that star rub like you keep talking about. And when you said he dropped his hands and everything, Anderson gave you a chance to knock him out and you didn't take it. You landed three straight shots on him and didn't continue because Anderson wanted you to finish him and you didn't.
You're right. That's an interesting way to frame it. Does he have that? Is he's always talking about, you know, I'm already a level up and they're still loading and all these video game, you know, catchphrases and he's got it on the microphone and he looked like he had it walking down a Brad Tavares. He looked like he had it killing a Derek Brunson. You're right. Anderson wasn't going to make it easy. He was going to go out on a shield with his back up against the fence, which is the worst place to be against an Adesanya, but he was going to give him that opportunity. And I think Adesanya was afraid of that fire coming back. I think either way, step back, even if he goes into a Whitaker matchup. And I don't think they'll push him into a Whitaker matchup. Had he walked in there and KO'd Anderson Silva, I think Dana calls up Kelvin Gastelum and says, sorry, bro. Sorry.
Yep.
Sorry.
No, you're right.
It's
because
time.
And that was like, that's like one of those conspiracy theories. If you really want to dig into this kind of like dark web stuff with UFC that.
Again, I live in the dark web. Come on.
You could make an argument that maybe UFC knew something about Robert Whittaker's health issues, right? Like maybe there was something there earlier in the week that they were like, hey, you know what? Maybe you should go to the hospital, but give it a minute. Let's see how these numbers look because. When I listened to the podcast back last week with your interview with Israel, when he's talking about how, oh, my videos on YouTube, on the YouTube for Embedded have like double what Robert Whittaker and Kelvin Gastelum's do. They wanted to see if Israel and Anderson could push that and maybe fill in a main event role. So maybe UFC said, hey, Robert, you need to go get that thing checked now. we need to figure this out and see if we got a star in this kid or not. That's a conspiracy theory for a lot of those weirdos out there that you could look into if you really think that that's a possibility.
First of all, never call us tinfoil hat wearers weirdos, right? We are the people that are willing to challenge the status quo. We are the people that are willing to believe. And, yeah, I'm not against that. I'm not against that idea. Sucks. It sucks for Israel. But, again, by playing it a little bit safe, does get the clean and clear win, does survive in advance, doesn't have the highlight reel of eating some crane kick like Vitor Belfort did, although that maybe that would have turned into an Israel coming back with the Mohawk 2013 TRT style and just juicing to the kills. Speaking of juice, are you in conspiracies? Good old Andy had more muscle definition than I've seen in a long time, and at 43, he went for it. Do you think he was think he had the headphones on before the fight, listening to the performance enhancing audio? Are we allowed to say that? Let's check with the legal team. Your thoughts wise?
He looked bloated around the waist. He had some great love handles. But the speed was back.
Oh, yeah.
That was the weird thing. It was like he definitely didn't look like the old school Anderson Silva where he's just cut up, looks fantastic all around. He was he has the dad bod now. He's 43.
Well, there was but more muscle, though. And I don't know if he trained as hard the last few years. Seriously. I think he was rolling in there. I'm Anderson Silva, and I'm a superhero. And, I mean, certainly the way he lost to Weidman the first time around, his ego was way too large. We know that. I think he cared – and Wise, I think it was the defense was the difference. His commitment to defense in round one and working behind a high guard, I know he dropped it late in round two and round three. We just said how stupid that was. But his commitment to fighting behind a high guard, we'd never seen that before.
Well, he also did the as Conor McGregor and a few other people called it, the attacked by beast defense. Yes. Where he was doing the touch-up on the shoulders and the head. That was awesome. I mean, he was. I think that also confused the hell out of Israel because Israel didn't know where his hands were going at those times. He didn't know if they were countering or if he was just defending.
It was. So, that was an entertaining as hell fight. You had a lot of showmanship. They did sort of pull it out and sort of measure, and they went back and forth a few times with that. And they didn't cross streams at all, but I was down with that.
So what now do you want for Anderson? He's talking about wanting to fight at UFC 237 in Brazil this May. And he actually mentioned Nick Diaz, but Nick Diaz then went on Instagram last night and said, I'm not interested in fighting right now. I just want a party. So what kind of surprise,
mother? Nick is bloated and he is partying. Follow him on Instagram. Visit his collaborations there. You will see that this man is touching a lot of stuff right now. There are things in his body. He will not be fighting anytime soon. It's weird though. Anderson coming in was talking about, I'm going to fight, maybe redo my deal and get a 5-fight deal. I feel like he put so much into this damn fight not to get knocked out. And by the way, he really, 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 really cares about his fans. Did you catch that from the interview we did? He is fueled by the love from his fans in a genuine way. I don't know if he's also smashing his fans on the side. He did, remember, ask me to bring my wife to that interview workout session, which in hindsight, I don't know what was going on with that. I don't know if he actually wanted a story or if he was like, you can wait outside. But anyway, he loves his fans, and I think this was a gift to the fans. And afterwards, you heard in his voice, it didn't sound like he wants to fight forever. It sounds like he wants one big more homecoming in his hometown of Curitiba, also the home of Chris Justino, correct, Cyborg?
I think so. That sounds right.
All right. That's interesting. You're not going to get Nick Diaz, it seems. So here's what you should do.
Here we go.
Fight Conor McGregor because it works. And when things work, Brandon, you use them. Not everything in this life works, but when you find something that works, you use it.
I could be fat. I could not have a six-pack, but my dick works. My dick works.
DC uses that thing. It works. This fight works. Don't talk to me about the weight issues. This is two martial artists that are fun, that have respect for each other. They can meet somewhere in the middle. It's pay-per-view gold. Nobody loses in this scenario. It's a way to send Anderson home. Do the hometown gift for the fans. Tell me any reason why we should not do Anderson Silva, Conor McGregor. Conor seemed into it, bro.
Conor actually tweeted in his tweet at the end of the fight where he was talking about Anderson. At the end of it, he finishes up with, it would be an honor. So, Conor's in. Connor's all about money.
Is Connor
so.
drunk tweeting there? We've seen some drunk tweet rampages lately. Well, you see LeBron had that wine drunk tweet there last week. And then, I don't know if anybody was watching Corey Graves from WWE on Twitter last night. He had a weird rampage going, and, people need to get away from the phone when there's things in your system.
The next tweet was about, Robert Whittaker, or about, Gaslam and carrying around that 185 belt. There are worms crawling on his skin. It was absolutely ludicrous to even consider him to compete, let alone now walk around the arena shaking our fans' hands. Someone needs to sort this out.
Let me sort that out for a second. Connor don't want that gas dome smoke, nor should he. That's Connor attacking Allie, right?
Yeah.
All right.
Yeah.
But take me back. Give me a reason that you do not want to see that fight, please.
Because Connor is 5'9 and Anderson is 6'2, and Anderson's skill set does not match up well with Connor.
I don't think Brandon likes to watch the UFC break records, because that would break every pay-per-view buy record.
That's not what it's about, dude. It's about what the fight would look like to me, and I don't think that's a good fight, because it would be similar to this with a small – it would be similar to Anderson Silva against Israel Adesanya with a smaller Israel Adesanya. Like, Connor – they're both counter-strikers. Connor is a counter-striker at heart. So if he's going to sit and wait, we're going to have a lot of Nick Diaz laying on the ground waiting for Anderson to jump guard.
No, we're
like,
not.
It's going to be.
I'm going to tell you why right now, okay? Anderson wouldn't fear his power, so you would get to see turn back the clock, crazy striking Anderson, and then Connor would play the Manny Pacquiao role against Oscar De La Hoya and come in there with flurries, and it would be something. Are you saying the reason why you don't like it, Brandon? I want to ask you this. I want to get inside the mind of Brandon Wise, okay? Come with me for a second. Is it because you fear a boring fight that would make the whole circus not worth it? Or is it that you fear, and this is what other journalists I've heard said, that it would be too one-sided in the favor of Anderson that it makes no sense?
Second one. And second part is, let's say in your guys' hypothetical world this does happen. Are you taking Conor McGregor to knock out Anderson Silva, Mikey?
No.
Okay. Brian, are you thinking Conor McGregor knocks out Anderson Silva?
No. The odds makers would look at that and say Anderson should win a decision and there's a chance he could stop him. I think Conor would be competitive and it'd be a fun fight and maybe Andy goes out on top.
Okay. So let's just say in this hypothetical world that Anderson Silva wins a decision against Conor McGregor this May. Conor McGregor then would not have won in the UFC since when? 2016?
Okay. So that's a danger you take, but to Mikey's point, you're moving 2 million pay-per-views for that, right? And what is Conor
and then
right
you're...
now? Is Conor a legitimate title contender, or do titles not matter for Conor? He is a lottery ticket at this point.
He's fighting whoever he wants and whoever is going to get
him
paid.
Guess what?
And he'll
fight GSP next. He'll fight GSP right after that.
And I understand it, and that's fine. But I just I don't understand the thought of, like, he was our first double champion ever. He's so great. All he does is win. He doesn't back down. And it's like, he hasn't won in a while. Like, it's been a minute since we've seen him actually successful. He said he wants to fight Nate if Nick was fighting Anderson. And I actually like that more. I think that's the card that you need to make if you're going to try and do this. I do not want to see Conor McGregor against Anderson Silva. I think Anderson's length and reach will be way too much for Conor. I think if Conor goes in there looking to drop a haymaker, like we've been talking about all show, Anderson's counterstrike is going to catch Conor flush, and I don't think Conor can hold up against that, especially if they do it at 185 or 180, if Anderson can even make 180, because I'm not even convinced Anderson can do a catch weight that's lower than 185 right now, honestly.
I say do it
He's 43.
Weight. I say do it open weight. There's so much sex to happen in this fight.
Break out the red panties. We're rich, baby.
And here's the truth. You know what happened that night on Mayweather-McGregor when everybody got rich? Conor sold his soul in the middle of that cage for you know, millions and sort of stardom immortality, right? Like, he took the Mayweather bait where it said, it's all about the money now. You know, it was about the money to a large degree for Conor on that build, but at that point, he left his soul in that ring. So, yes, I got fooled when he came back to fight Habib after 2 years that he could still be that guy, that magic, Brandon Wise, and you can't deny that magic was ever there. That magic had him knock out Jose Aldo in 13 seconds when we all wonder what did that fight look like. That magic lulled Eddie Alvarez into going away from his plan to wrestle and get knocked out. Look, there was magic that was similar to the Tim Tebow magic with the Broncos. the Jeremy Lin magic for 2 weeks with the Knicks. Sometimes in sports, there's magic. Some people believe it's spiritually induced, but sometimes there's just a run of damn magic. He left the magic in the cage, in the ring against Mayweather, and cashed the damn check. He's not that guy anymore, and that's fine. Why not let him do these party favor fights that are big events and you use his trash-talking ability? Because once he gets a couple more L's in UFC, he's done anyway, and he's probably fighting Paulie Malignaggi in boxing and then probably Tenshin Nasukawa out there in Japan. It's a carnival show. It's no longer. Whatever was left on the inside of that soul, they sent it to the location, and Habib ate it.
You're damn right he did. I'll end this part of our conversation with this. I think that Connor's tweets and how he's using his social media is actually the best way for UFC to use him, because people really weren't interested in this card, right? Like, as the news comes out on Saturday afternoon, people like kind of were just like, all right, I don't have to worry about this card now. And then the Anderson Silva fight happens and people are talking about it on Twitter. And then all of a sudden Connor's jumping in the conversation, and all of a sudden more people are looking for this story online and searching on Google and looking to find out what the hell he's talking about. And he's been doing this for the last few cards. If this is how he's going to participate now in UFC, but until they make him a fight in maybe May or June, this is what helps them get more numbers. This is what helps them keep interest, because the fights in the talk beforehand with press conferences aren't really doing it. Conor McGregor talking about your fighters and keeping people interested is what's going to keep numbers up.
He's an influencer. He's a social media influencer, and they used him effectively. I'm not against that. Yeah, they got
use him for Firefest.
Firestarter.
Oh, wow. would you take one for the team for this podcast, speaking of Fire Festival, if you needed to?
No.
It's my first episode, so no.
All right. Yeah.
Did I not know I'm half black?
Oh, stop it. Just stop it.
So my question, Brian and Brandon.
Well, hold on.
I'm half black from the belly button down.
I can't believe he lived past that comment, by the way. All right, keep it going.
So my question for you guys is, we hit on Anderson's side. Who do you want to see Adesanya fight next? Because these last two fights, like Brunson, the name power is there a little bit. 2-4 in his last six fights. We all know Anderson's story. The name's there, but it's not the same Anderson. So, like, if I'm talking about you guys, would you give Adesanya that next title shot? Or do you want to see him face someone like Romero or someone that's in that top three, top four area?
I think
to be really tested.
So right before we had the talk breaking down this fight, I'd said, you know, I don't know. We'll see. I don't know. I know now. We fleshed it out in this conversation. I know now. Adesanya took a slight step backward in this, proved that he's not ready right now for the damn title. So you do Adesanya versus Gastelum, number one contenders fight. I don't think you need to do an interim title, because I hate that crap. They probably will, though, to sell the fight extra. Even if Robert Whittaker isn't that hurt, they'll probably say, look, Whittaker's injured. Let's float this crap belt out. We'll make it a pay-per-view main event. Adesanya, Gastelum, you'd sell Kelvin. Look, we'll pay you more. We'll pay you main event money. Brandon, you're okay with that, right? Winner gets Whittaker?
See, so this is my thing, though, with Israel. It's like, was Brunson even in the top 15 when he fought him? Okay, so he hasn't even been in the top 15.
Well, maybe at the end. I mean, it's not a strong.
And he just fought a 43-year-old guy who they gave a number 15 ranking to because of his legacy. Do you really think he's in that line for a title shot right now, or even a number one contender fight?
I think he needs to fight one of these guys who has a wrestling background that can also strike. Enough of the one-dimensional fighters where it's going to be kind of a cupcake match or a good setup match for him. I think he needs to fight someone who's could take him down and potentially put him somewhere where he's uncomfortable, or could potentially stand there and exchange with him, not to a full level of it, but to a partial level and to hold the ground in there with him.
Well, that's interesting that you say that. If you're like a matchmaker, and UFC doesn't always matchmake this way, but like, let's look at boxing, top ranked, the best matchmakers of all time. They'll take a young fighter, they'll make sure he fights every single style that could potentially expose him so that he's ready when he finally goes up to the mainstream. UFC has proven in recent years, there's no more of that. It's, oh, you can sell, you're going, you skip the line. You're right, he probably should fight a wrestler so that we and he can know exactly how good he is, but that's not always what's best for business. I think they already put the rocket ship on him. You gotta keep going with it. I think Gastelum is sort of that softer step where, okay, if he's really for real, he'll beat Gastelum. Then that will tell you that he earns the title shot. Is there anyone else in the division wise that should or could leapfrog? I mean, your guy, Weidman, who, I don't know, just last week was telling TMZ he wants to fight John Jones. And again, brother, you don't want that smoke. And now suddenly he's back in at middleweight. He wants all these guys.
Yeah, he tweeted that he was not impressed. Said overrated for Adesanya's fight, which that would be an interesting one. A little bit of wrestling.
That's the perfect guy for you, right?
Downfall.
Yeah, Mikey, that's the guy that really fits that prototype there, of that stereotype wrestler.
He also seemed to be angling for a third fight with Anderson Silva, which I'm not against that. I think you want to see that you just want to see that so that you can actually see Anderson Silva lose to him.
I'm going to tell you something that you're going to have to deal with here, Brandon. If they do the third fight and Anderson Silva defeats Chris Weidman in Curitiba, he wins the rivalry.
That is the worst thing that could happen for Chris Weidman ever, is if they fight a third time and Anderson wins. Because then
thank you. And this is still my boy!
Shut up, Mr. Weidman. Shut up. Rockhold took his soul and he still owns it. Anyway, Brandon, that's probably not bad matchmaking right there.
I'm not against it. Just to go back really quick, Israel fought Derek Brunson and Brad Tavares, who are both now in the top 10. I don't know for sure if they were when he fought them at their times, but to be fair, those are two guys now that Israel has wins over in the top 10 of the middleweight division. I think if your boy Luke Rockhold ever gets healthy, that's another good fight too.
For who? Anderson?
For Israel.
That is actually a really smart idea. Israel Luke Rockhold is very sellable, and that really would sort of – it wouldn't answer the wrestling question by any means. It's a heck of a fun style matchup between strikers. But, again, it comes down to what UFC's plan is. Is it to rush him into a title fight and hope he wins it? Or is it to now slow your roll and try to make sure he's that good? I don't think they have that in their matchmaking DNA anymore.
Yeah, I don't either. It's either you're going to sell for us and you're going to get a title shot, or you're just going to be another guy who fights on the early prelims.
Right, and even though Gastelum played it perfectly from a PR standpoint, he doesn't have leverage right now in terms of needing. I mean, look, if Tony Ferguson wasn't guaranteed a title shot upon coming back when he got freak injured doing PR work for UFC, then, you know, if you see the way some of these guys are handled, the way Colby was handled, I don't know, the way Nico Montano was handled, Kelvin Gastelum will not be getting any special gifts anytime soon, most likely.
Yeah. R.I.P. Jermaine Duran to me in her title run.
Never heard of it. Let's roll on out of that main event. Nothing else really to capture from those two fights, but bad card on paper, played out okay. Do you think it overachieved the definition of worst pay-per-view main and undercard we've ever seen?
It was better than 224. I'll give it that. The one with Amanda Nunes against Rocky Pennington. But, yeah, I mean, it was just another average to below average card in general. There was just not a lot of fireworks. Like, Lando Venata got a nice submission win in the first round of this what became the co-main event, but there was nothing great in that fight.
He exposed the guy,
stellar.
Marcos Mariano, who just was, like, remedial-level CM Punk style on the ground. It's like, come on.
Yeah. Ricky Simone looked phenomenal, both in the ring and with his flow, with his greasy mullet.
I need more Ricky Simone in my life. I mean, really, he wore it down Yaya and really put it on him. I mean, I love the pressure. There is Clay Guida comparisons there, right? Prime Clay Guida?
Yeah, I would say so. I kind of felt bad for Yaya just because he seemed like he was trying to pull a Damian Maia where he just wanted to get the fight to the ground in the worst way possible, and Simone was just not having it.
Love it. My girl, Montana De La Rosa, for some reason, you don't see what I see, Brandon Wise, and, you know, I'm not necessarily going in that direction, but I'm saying, you can tell me all day that Nadia Kassim was not ready for prime time, but Montana De La Rosa, second round submission via armbar, rolled through there. Look, we had just seen her take care of Rachel Ostovich, last summer, and, this is a player at women's flyweight, and, you know, this isn't the best division. It's not that deep. She's long at 5'7". She's young. I think she's an out, a tough out. Could be a future title contender now that she's put four wins together.
Yeah, she's a future title contender in a division that's shallow as hell.
She did get submitted by Mackenzie Dern in 2016 in the Legacy Fighting Championships. I'm here for that rematch. You?
Yeah, let's book that. Go ahead and book that just so we can see how good your girl actually is.
She got stopped by Cynthia Calvillo in the next fight in LFA in 2017, but 4-0, 3-0 in the UFC. I'm not saying she's fighting killers, but let's see more. Let's see more. I'm down with that. The rest of this card, tell me why I should care. I mean, the tarantula Jalen Turner is back with a knockout win in the first round. That was nice to see. But Sam Alvey, welcome to your first numbered card. We'll never see you again. Thank you. That's about it.
Yeah, that, oh my God. I kind of feel bad for Sam Alvey just because he's such a positive person in general and seems to have a good head on his shoulders, but he's just not a great or good fighter. He's just an average guy who's been around for this long that's finally got on his first pay-per-view card ever.
With you. I'm with you on that. Let's roll on before we set the stage for what's coming this weekend, a really good weekend of mixed martial arts. Check out those latest headlines. We mentioned, of course, the tweets post 234 from McGregor. We can do this every week because it sort of needs to, because you're always going to get an update from Conor McGregor on social media on what's on his mind. Based on those tweets that we mentioned, the ones calling out Gastelum, the ones saying he'll fight Nate on Anderson's card, the ones saying he still wants Anderson, what's McGregor's 2019 look like for you, Wise? I mean, it looked like Cowboy for a hot second. Looked like Jose Aldo, maybe. Where are we going here?
I think you still got to look at those two. None of this weekend really seemed to me to indicate anything future fight plan-wise. I think he was more just having fun on Twitter, talking up a big game. I don't see how you can't look at the Jose Aldo rematch as a possibility for that Kurtibica card in Brazil. Make it the homecoming for Jose Aldo that he deserves and put Conor McGregor there. Like, has Conor McGregor fought a UFC pay-per-view main event anywhere outside the United States before? I don't think so, right?
No. He had that homecoming card early in his run, right, where he headlined in Dublin, I believe.
But his pay-per-views are always either Vegas or at MSG, I'm pretty sure.
That is true.
So why not experiment, take your chance with this, which I don't really think is even a gamble at this point, to put Conor McGregor and Jose Aldo there.
It's a gamble from a financial standpoint, because there's a reason why these guys, when a fight gets this big, I mean, there's a reason, you could say it's security, I say no, there's a reason why Anderson Silva, Chael Sonnen 2 didn't end up in Brazil, because there's more money to be made from the site fee and from jacking up the ticket prices in Las Vegas for these, and that's the reason why everybody goes back to Las Vegas.
But there can't be like a state tax or anything in Brazil that's going to take a lot of money away from these guys, right?
It seems the only Brazil benefit is lax drug testing. Can we be honest?
More TRT. More Vitor Mohawk.
I think if you're UFC, you need two Conor appearances. You need the first one still to be softish. We don't do get wells. We don't do stay busies, but one he can win. You want Cowboy, you want Aldo, that's fine. I don't throw him right back in with Nate yet, because that's still a fight he can lose. It's a fight he can take a lot of damage. Let's not forget, that second fight was a war. Dana was scared afterwards to ever do a third one because they both took so much sustained damage. Seriously, we always think the flashy first-round knockouts where somebody's lights get turned out and they're shaken is the worst thing that can happen to you. Really, it's five rounds of sustained damage. And Nate and Conor, I mean, they fought through hell that night. Am I wrong, Wise?
No, you're right. My only thing is, I'm thinking about it now, we're at what with Jose Aldo? 33? 34 32, maybe?
32.
30. Okay, he's at 32. And like you just said, he himself has been through some damn wars too. He's been in the game for so long that his chin might be questionable if he gets up there against more elite competition again.
Come on, let's bring in Conor.
His chin is deteriorating.
So I might have question marks if they make that fight, how long he's going to sustain, given that Conor knocked him out in 13 seconds the first time. I don't think it'll be a flash knockout like that, but it's enough of a fight to me that I would be very intrigued in the buildup, how the two interact before the fight, and then once it gets into the cage, because they're not going to go to the ground, they're going to stand and trade, and it's just going to be who falls first.
I think you're going to see the most – if they did that fight, you would see the most inspired. You'd have to do it at 155, and you'd see the most inspired Jose Aldo you have ever seen. You'd see him put on some more muscle, and you'd see him ready for war with the crowd behind him. Maybe that's more dangerous for Conor than I realize. Look, I'm obviously looking at this not from the standpoint of a Conor superfan, but from the standpoint of making the most money out of Conor and keeping him around if you're UFC so you can make – the kind of pay-per-view, you know, money in financials that come in that his star power, his rare once in a generation star power, you know, would bring. And that's what it is. It's a business. That's what you look at him now. He's not running back that Khabib rematch, nor should he. It's like I mentioned earlier, it's gone, the idea in my mind of this guy fighting through the rankings and winning titles. So I don't know. You do the Cowboy one just to rebuild his ego?
I think the Cowboy one is more scary than you would think, though, because Cowboy's great off his back, and he has the striking that can kind of keep it up there. Yes, he doesn't move his head enough, and Connor will kind of pepper him in the face and get a hold of that. But I think he might be able to pull off that, like, Nate Diaz first fight where maybe he catches him on the ground real fast with something off his back, like a triangle or something. Something from the WEC days, you know?
But true or false here? Cerrone's got a little Diaz brother in him. Doesn't tend yeah. to win at the highest level. Doesn't tend to win when those lights are the brightest. Yeah, look great against Eddie Alvarez in Alvarez's debut, but really, Wise, defend that. There's no defense there.
No, and to go off of that, are we sure Cowboy can still take people to the ground? Because last I checked, he looked pretty stiff in that fight against Alexander Hernandez.
You're stiff
a couple
as a board.
He's stiff as a board. I like that fight. I do agree that it is a little bit dangerous because of Cowboy's power, but at the same time, it is soft enough that I don't think it's going to be as wild and crazy in exchanges as we might think it might.
Interesting. Let's look at Khabib now. What's the news this week with Dana?
So Khabib is on his suspension with Nevada, which, again, one governing body making sure that you can't fight anywhere in the country is kind of a joke. So Khabib is going to sit out for his suspension, but he's also going to sit out until his training partners and teammates are off of their suspensions because he thinks that it's unjust for them to have received the punishment that they did. Well, Dana White says, you're not going to be able to do that.
Read that quote. Can't. I mean, that's insane. Read that quote.
Dana says, guys can't sit out and wait that long when you have the title. Says they'll have to figure something out if that's Khabib's plan.
Oh,
so let's just go. Hold on.
Yeah, I got pot and kettle on line one. Go for it. What do you got?
Khabib fought for the belt against Conor, right? That was October 6th. That was the day I got married. That was 4 months ago at this point in time right now. How many guys have fought only once in the last year or in a year or two with their title over their shoulder to protect it? I mean, it's gotta be.
Oh, we can run down a list based on injuries and all that, or you can just say Conor McGregor held the lightweight title for 2 full years and did not get stripped until UFC 223. And then we weren't even sure if he actually was stripped because Dana was so weird in those interviews the week of. Remember like the whole like, well, Brett Okamoto of ESPN, is he stripped or how do you not understand this, Brett? Cause you're not saying anything. This is such a friggin' joke. You know what's coming here. Another interim title. Remember that one Tony had? So what does this mean?
Well, does Tony still have it? Because I still see him posting pictures with
it. Oh, he does, but they technically have taken it away from him when Al Iaquinta lost. So where are we going here? Are we going for a summer or fall fight? Tony Ferguson versus who for potentially an interim title? Now, Ferguson deserves this more than anybody. But strategically, if you're UFC, because look, that reaction from Dana is ridiculous. Okay, it's just ridiculous. But it does give them opportunities to elevate somebody here. Do you throw Conor back into that mix and give him Tony? I don't think so. I think that's too dangerous to fight. You're going to get a Tony win. I don't think you're going to sacrifice Conor's brand for Tony. Then who do you give Ferguson? Do you give Alec Iaquinta?
What about Dustin Poirier?
Oh, yeah. That's way better. You're right.
That's the Dustin Poirier spot if I've ever seen one because they don't trust him to main event yet. They still have their questions about if he's sellable. You give him an interim title shot against a dude like Tony Ferguson who is bat bleep crazy and will say anything at these press conferences and during these press tours to sell a fight. Put those two together, I think that's a great matchup, first of all,
yeah.
And I think that those personality clashes is going to be fantastic.
Okay, that fight is violence, that fight is everything, and that fight, to tease what you just said, might make Ferguson a star, really. That might be the fight that makes Ferguson a star and then sets him up to when he's playing B-side to either Conor or Khabib in 2020, you're doing big business. Yes, make that fight. This is one of those rare times where I might have to support an interim title, especially because Tony never deserved to get it stripped from him. This might be that time to do it. And
But it seems weird just because that seems like a fight that's pretty easy to make unless Tony is the one saying he doesn't want to fight anybody besides Khabib. So if he's saying that he's going to sit out and wait for Khabib, then that's where this gets complicated, because Dustin, for all of his greatness and how he's the run that he's been on, has had his own issues with UFC. As of we talked last week, he's been publicly negotiating on Twitter, trying to get fights done, saying that they're not doing anything right with his contract. He's going to wait for a top contender. Apparently they offered him, he's saying that they offered him Ally Aquinta, but he doesn't want to fight Ally Aquinta because what's that going to do for
him?
And Ally Aquinta is now calling him soft or whatever, saying that we need to make this deal happen. And I feel like it just makes so much – it's almost dumb that this fight hasn't been booked yet, because it just makes so much sense for both guys.
Yeah.
They both need a fight, and they both have their own issues with getting treated properly by UFC. If you're either guy's management, you need to go to UFC and say, hey, we need to make this fight. We will take less money. We will take whatever our current contracts are to make this fight happen, and then we will renegotiate once this is over. It's too simple.
If you're wondering where Nate Diaz fits in there, he doesn't. Chael Sonnen interviewed Gilbert Melendez in Australia before the card last week. And what are those weird Bet DSI videos that Chael's constantly pumping out, probably for huge cash? I believe in Chael.
Never piss off a gangster.
Very financially smart there. But the point was, Gilbert was saying Nick's never coming back, and Nate is making too much money to need to come back. What is Nate doing in the weed game? Just smoking profits and I mean, this guy, shout out to him if he doesn't need the UFC. Maybe he comes back one more time to finally do that Conor thing. But again, that's a lottery ticket for UFC that there's no need to force that cash in. That's an old guy trilogy fight waiting to happen. So he's out of it. This pleases everybody. This is a division that's been bottlenecked, the deepest, best division in all of the sport. Yes, this does seem to fix that, Dustin versus Tony. What about Daniel Cormier? Dana thinking that he's going to fight three times? Dude, this Cormier fake retirement mandate of when he turns 40 in March smells so much like Bernard Hopkins, who for years in boxing had been like, I promised my dying mother I would never fight past the age of 40. Then that became 41. Then he fought till he's 51, okay? Until Joe Smith Jr. sent him to hell through the ropes that last time. DC ain't going anywhere, guys, because DC's now getting that main event pay-per-view money.
Well, I was going to say, if he has this self-imposed retirement plan for March when he turns 40, it's April. It's February 11th today. Like, he needs to make a fight like now if he's going to fight before that date at this point. Like, clearly the retirement is not happening in March this year. He's clearly going to fight at least two. I think he's going to fight two more times this year before he does decide to call it a career. And I think that it makes the most sense to wait and see what happens with this John Jones, Brock Lesnar, and Stipe Miocic saga, because, first of all, we were talking about this before. Why has Stipe not gotten a fight? Like, obviously, he's still holding out hope for this rematch, but it's not going to happen, man. Like, Daniel's chasing money, and he does not see dollar signs with you next to it. He needs to make some kind of fight in the next 2 months if he wants to still stay active and still stay atop this heavyweight division at this point, right?
That's fair. That's fair. And you saw Stipe and DC going back and forth. This is dangerous for DC's, I think, has to declare something for me to really understand where he's going moving forward. When he takes the third Jones fight, is it going to be at heavyweight, where I think it should be? Because I think DC with the heavyweight championship has the leverage to make that fight, coming off all John's drug issues, in the most advantageous division for him, which is heavyweight, where he can hold some advantages. We've never seen John there. DC doesn't have to cut to 205. Might have more punching power there. But if he feels like he has to do this thing where he runs back to 205 to do that trilogy to prove to himself he can beat the light heavyweight version of John, I don't know, man. I don't like his chances in that fight. I also wonder what Cain Velasquez's influence is in this. He's coming back after a couple years this Sunday. We're going to preview that fight later. It's a fantastic fight. If Cain instantly is back and ready and deserving of a title shot, DC's been one hell of a great friend this whole run. He only ever cut to 205 for his friend. Does this mean that DC's gonna get out of the division and get back down to 205 for Jones just to let his friend get back and win back his title. Like, I don't like any of this. Just like, I don't know if I like the idea of fighting Stipe when you could risk the Jones fight. Really, this is suddenly now a weird how you manage this. Where does Lesnar fit in here? Like, where does this – I don't know where this is going.
So I think the injury with DC really, like, kind of changed how everything is, if he's actually hurt, because you never know when guys are actually hurt or not. I want to say that the Lesnar stuff with WWE really threw a wrench in all of these plans, because if that doesn't happen, they're probably already announced for this April card, right? They're probably already doing, like, promos – DC against Lesnar at 236 whenever they make that announcement, because they need to make that fight happen. Like, DC wants that cash out. And I don't know. I think depending on what, like you said, what happens with Kane, that might affect his decision making here, because if Kane wins, all of a sudden now he's back in this title talk for the heavyweight belt, even though they won't fight each other.
Here's the thing. If Kane is going to win and be back in the title picture, maybe DC should give up the – or maybe he should fight Lesnar, get the pay-per-view money, then give up the belt, then take his time to get back to 205 if that's where he feels, because then everyone would win. I don't think he'd beat Jones, but everyone would win, because the idea of Stipe, Kane, you might be putting the two best heavyweight champions in UFC history against each other, and then you can kind of bill it as whoever wins this is the greatest.
So my question to that is – you're going to have DC going back down to 205. Like, he's struggled with weight cuts and the ballooning up to the heavyweight division. I forget what he weighed in for his last fight, but I know it was above 240.
Oh, yeah.
And so now you're going to bring him back down to 205, where he had that little weight issue where he used his thumbs on the towel.
Oh, he held the damn towel in Buffalo. Don't forget.
So you have those things. Like, is it possible for DC, like, another year on his age? Is it possible for him to make 205?
It's
like,
a really bad idea, but he seems to say it's in play, and I don't get it unless it's all about the friendship of opening the door back up to Kane and DC going all in on I have to beat Jones at 205, which, again, makes no sense to me. You already removed the need to beat John Jones when you went up and beat Stipe. That allowed you an entry to the upper room table of the five greatest fighters in history. I'm talking about Silva, I'm talking about GSP, John Jones, possibly Demetrius Johnson, and Fedor. Membership into that club, DC, now belongs because he did that. I get the idea of I still can fight Jones for Red Bull money, and I can, because the only thing he can do to improve his resume is beat Jones, obviously. If he beats Jones, he's got a chance. He is the argument to be the GOAT. I don't think he'd be the GOAT. Well, I say that now, yet I'm sitting here telling you today that I think Jones is still the GOAT, drugs or not. So, yeah, I guess he would have a pretty damn good case of being the GOAT. But, man, don't do that crap at 205.
He's looked so great at heavyweight. It doesn't make sense for me. I'm not a fighter. I don't know anything about the game, but it doesn't make sense for me for him to drop back down. His hands are back. He's got that power back in his hands. He looks comfortable at heavyweight, so.
I think he's going to call it. I really think it's one to two fights this year. He defends the belt against either Lesnar and then either Jones or Stipe, and then he walks off because Kane will have fought. If Kane wins this weekend, he probably has one more before he gets back up to that title fight, and then that's where he's going to be like, yep, you know what? Kane's the best. I give up my belt. Kane, you go take it. And I think that's where this picture ends up.
Man, he's too good of a friend.
That's what I'm saying.
He's taking too many for the team. There's a fire festival around you, DC. Come on, get on the last plane. Get out of there, bro. Hey, by the way, my girl and yours, JJ, young J-Check, Joanna, have you been following her on Instagram? She's vacationing all over the world. You follow this journey? Or am I the only creeper watching this?
I wish I had the money to travel the world like she does, because she seems to be able to do whatever she wants.
She seems like the happiest person ever. Cut back down to 115. Smart move. Does not have the power for 125 against the elites. I'm here every single day of the week for a trilogy fight against Rose. Of course, Rose is going to have to go through Andrade. And I still don't know if I favor her in that. But I think Joanna has one more big girl bout at 115 to try to put a capstone on her legacy.
Yeah. I hope that they give her the chance. I have question marks still about her fighting against Rose if they make that fight happen. Because I think she beats Jessica Andrade again. I think that would be a pretty easy fight for her just based on her style, how it matches up with Andrade. But I still have a lot of questions on if Rose is fighting Joanna a third time, because if she wins 3-0, it's hard to argue against her being better, like, after all of that talk about Joanna being the best 115er of all time.
She's still the best 115er of all time, but I hear you. Three losses to one person. Sorry. You might be out of that conversation. What the hell is Amanda Nunes thinking here? She wants a third UFC title. What does that mean? You're not cutting to 125, are you, Mandy?
So this is what she says. Every time I wake up, I see the belts, and I think I can get more, collect more. I know I have the capacity, so I have this will. It's possible, but I need some time. I need a year to get ready. I'm not afraid, but I need time. If I go down this path, I'll take that belt, and but I have to be ready.
All right. Because I think Valentina Bullet beat her in that rematch, I'm always going to be here for a trilogy fight between them as well. This has been a fun rivalry. It's been very close. But, I mean, am I hypocritical to say this is a bad idea and I don't want to see this? Yet I'm saying, hey, GSP, convince Dana to let you fight Habib to try to win a third title and become the first champ. This is interesting here. Do you see it in her body when you look at her? Could she be that thin and wiry and be effective? I don't know, man.
I don't think so. We talked about it at 232 when she beat Cyborg, how good she looked physically, because she was at a more natural weight where she didn't have to worry about a weight cut. She was able to eat healthy and not have to worry about sweating it all out at the end of the night. She is a natural 145er. If she's really serious about doing this, like she said, it's going to take her time, and it's going to take her a lot of hours of just cutting weight and trying to change up her diet and everything. Do you think that it has anything to do with that, by the way, that you mentioned about the Valentina fight? Do you think that she wants to go down there and prove that she can knock her out? Because to me, that's the only reason that she would even need to do that.
If you're her, I mean, why don't you do a champion versus champion third fight at 135, which Valentina would do tomorrow? Yeah, I mean, I get why she would do it. She would want the third championship. It's really dangerous. It does open up this possibility, and I'm not trying to be creepy or put anything on anyone's lives, but let's say Amanda does go down to 125. Say she wins that championship. Let's say she goes, well, I can make this way easy. And then her and Nina, the relationship gets rocky. Maybe there's a third person involved. Maybe it is Rocky. Actually, maybe it's Rocky who's the third person involved. And then we have the first X battle. A breakup. Because I've always said, one day if Tisha and Rocky Pennington, you know, have issues, maybe they meet in the middle at 125, right? Maybe, I mean, are we going to have to cut this audio out afterwards? Is that insensitive? I'm just saying. There would be some passion in that matchup.
I have so many questions about you. What is going on in your brain at this point? Please don't do this again.
I'm a natural born matchmaker. All right, let's get into this weekend. We have a loaded Friday. Hey, if you like MMA, Friday, Saturday, and Sunday, it's coming after you. Bellator doing this Bellator trick that they keep doing, probably to fill dates on DAZN, but we're going to see a Friday night card and a Saturday night card, both from the same location. Sometimes they split up the sites. Sometimes they're in the same city. They did this in Hawaii. They did this in Connecticut and New York. They're doing it this time around in my backyard of the Mohegan Sun Arena in Uncasville, Connecticut. I don't like that they do this, guys. I say this a lot. You could have one really loaded card this weekend. Instead, we're splitting them up. Friday night, Bellator 215, headlined by what could be a banger. Matt Mitrione, fresh off his loss, his one-sided whitewashing to Ryan Bader in that World Grand Prix, going to fight Sergey Karatanov, a Strikeforce Grand Prix veteran. Well, yeah, we're going to see fireworks here. This one's not going off. This one's not seeing a round two, bro.
I'm excited for this just because he was finally somebody to put an end to Roy Nelson and knocked him out in the first round like I haven't seen in a long time. So I really like Sergey in this fight. Matt Mitrione is the only one doing the promotions, I think, because he's the only one who speaks English between the two of them. And he keeps talking about, oh, yeah, I knocked out Fedor. I'm going to knock out this other Russian guy, too. I don't think so, buddy. I think that Sergey is going to be a little bit more for you to handle than 44-year-old Fedor was at that point in his career. I think Matt is getting to that washed point. He's a little bit reliant on those hands to do all of his damage. He's not moving around the octagon as well, or the cage as well. Yeah, I think Sergey might just finish him clean here in the second or third round.
Wow. I mean, for as good as Matt looked at times, I mean, he finished Fedor, although he got dropped in that double knockout at Bellator NYC pay-per-view that was amazing. let's not forget, he had trouble in those first two Bellator fights, too. Remember that, jobber knocked him down and rocked him? That was a weird setup. That was an international card in which Mitrione was going to be on the announce team, yet had a fight on the card, got rocked, got up, won the fight, was not with it, and then joins the announce booth after showering. That was a little bit weird on there. But this is a banger of a main event. I don't really love the rest of the card. We're going to see Eduardo Dantas, former champion, there in a bantamweight bout against Toby Misech. I'm not seeing a lot of names that I know or love outside of there.
There's one that you should know and love.
My boy Michael Kimball, is that what you're talking about?
No, it's Mr. Van Zandt, Austin Vanderford.
Oh, yeah, Mr. Van Zandt. He's got a welterweight bout against Cody Jones. Do we know anything? Can this guy fight, or is he just a side piece here? What are we doing?
I think he's just a side piece for now, but hey, if he looks good in this fight, he's 6-0 in his professional career. This is his first fight after fighting on Dana White's Tuesday Night Contender Series after Bellator snatched him up. If he can perform well, he might be something to pay attention to for a minute.
All right, guy to pay attention to for real on this undercard is the aforementioned Mike Kimball. You woke on this guy, Brandon Wise, from my backyard, legit. He's from Waterbury, Connecticut, city next to where I grew up in Naugatuck there. And Kimball has two, 10-second knockouts with Bellator, two highlight reel ones already. The guy can fight. I believe he's with Connor's manager as well.
Oh, really?
What's the guy's name? Audie Attar. I believe he's with them as well. He's fighting Jonathan Duma in a bantamweight bout. You see this guy as a good prospect? Have you seen that 6-second KO he had at Bellator 207? The guy brings it. The guy bangs.
I do remember that. Is he going to be what they hoped for James Gallagher and Aaron Pico?
Could be. He's young. I believe he's only about 19. He's in, he brings somebody to watch for sure. Also, Mr. Van Zandt on the undercard in a women's atomweight bout. We have Lindsey Van Zandt fighting. Any relation to Paige here?
Not that I'm aware of.
All right. Just a weird coincidence there. Interesting. Yeah. I don't believe she's related as well. Let's bounce forth through Saturday night. This is the fight that really matters. Bellator 216, same arena there. Of course, it's going to be on the Friday night one, I believe is one of those co-streams between the Paramount Network and DAZN. Saturday night, however, is a DAZN exclusive in the States. If you want this Michael Venom Page Paul Daly welterweight war as part of this amazing Grand Prix tournament, it is in DAZN. Also, shout out to Scott Coker and Bellator signing that exclusive deal with Sky Sports in the UK, which seems to be another profitable step forward for Bellator. But look, this tournament is fantastic. Rory McDonald in it with that Bellator welterweight championship, but you could argue that this group of welterweights in Bellator better than what we see over in the UFC, and this is that grudge match between two guys with dynamite in their fists that we've wanted to see for a while. They made it happen. MVP could be a future star of the sport. Violence and fireworks, right? I mean, that's it. Buckle up. Get in there. Get in there early. Get ready for this thing. But before we get all in the weeds on this card, let's hear from the two fighters. Paul Daly, Michael Venom Page, coming at you right now. Enjoy. Paul Daly, Semtex, my man, coming in hot and heavy. How are you, brother?
I'm good, mate. How are you?
Doing great. You know, we're all fired the heck up for Saturday night, Bellator 216. Finally, we get to see the clash with MVP. How long have you been waiting for this?
Well, it's a massive fight. I think he's been waiting for this fight for a long time. I've just been waiting for the time to be right. So the time is right now, February 16th. Everybody's going to get to see a fantastic show and an explosive main event.
Look, Paul, when this tournament, the Bellator Welterweight World Grand Prix, which is fantastic, when it was starting to get put together and you started to hear the names who could be in this and the rumors are leaking out, everyone's going, I see MVP. Where the heck is Paul Daly? I need this tournament to get some Semtex ejected in the veins. It seemed to take a while. Now you're here. How hard was that process?
It wasn't really hard, you know. It was kind of when the tournament was announced, it came at the time when I hooked up with a new manager, a manager, because I've been managing myself for 90% of my career. It was just that we had to negotiate and figure a few things out, but it was always going to happen. It's just that we just had to make sure everything made sense.
All right. Well, does it make sense for you to have this fight in Connecticut? Hey, that's my backyard. That's where I live, brother. I'm fired up. But the UK fans are like, what's going on, Coker?
Yeah, I think maybe the way I hear it is that the timing, just maybe it was the delay in me signing the contract, or maybe it was the venue availability is what I'm hearing. And they just couldn't find an arena to host the event. But there's a lot of arenas in the UK, but I think the fight had to be at one of the prestigious arenas, whether it be the MEN, the O2, Wembley, and I think those venues were all booked up. So yeah, Connecticut. Going to be in Connecticut.
Hey, let's do 80,000 in Wembley fans. Stadium, please, Carl Froch. Move aside. Let's do 80,000 in Wembley Stadium. Come on. All right. Tell me, Paul, about the appeal for you in signing up for this tournament.
I've always wanted to be involved in a tournament, going way, way back. Early interviews, I always mentioned at the time, as a young mixed martial artist, I always mentioned Pride and seeing the spectacular fights there, seeing all the confetti fall down from the ceiling, the big checks at the end. It was what was driving me in the sport at the time, to be involved, not necessarily in matchups, but to be involved in such a tournament. And it just seems that I've got my wish. You know, I've been lucky enough that Scott Coker's now here at Bellator, and Scott Coker also spent a lot of time in Japan, and you can see how that's influenced him and how he's ran his both Strikeforce and now Bellator with this tournament format. And I think it's a great format. It just allows the best matchups to be made, and just makes it that slightly, it makes it extremely interesting for the fan, and I'm excited to be part of it.
No question about it. There's the potential for some incredibly fun matchups. I'm going to ask you, is one of those fun matchups a rematch with John Fitch? Because you seemed really upset fighting him last May. Can you tell us what happened in that fight?
Well, yeah, I would. I know I could win the fight if certain things are in play, but not even certain things. I wasn't happy with the referee. I'll go out and say it. He lied backstage. I don't want to go into too much details about his relationship previously with John Fitch. But that's all I'll say about that. But that's not a fight that I look forward to. A fight that I would look forward to is Douglas Lima, because I think that I am at fault in that fight. I rushed a fight, and the referee did everything right in that fight. I just didn't take my time. And Douglas is an extremely tough guy and former champion, but I really think I have the beating of him. So John Fitch, I think Rory takes him out quite comfortably anyway. Rory, for me, is one of the best pound-for-pound fighters in the world, an extremely talented and scary fighter, to be honest with you. So I think Fitch is taken out. But I'm looking forward. It's Michael Page, obviously, February 16th. But if I could ask for a rematch, it would be the one against Douglas Lima.
Good Lord, that would be hot fire. You're 35 now, Paul. Are you changing the way you look at fights and the way you attack them? Because you're Semtex. We want to see you go out there and bang. But obviously, being too reckless at times can get you in trouble. Who is Paul Daly at 35?
Paul Daly at 35 is, obviously, I've matured a lot. I understand the sport a lot. And I'm a martial artist. I watch my fights. And, you know, you don't, if I've done something in a fight that's been a mistake, I'm not going to be looking to make that same mistake, no matter how entertaining it is for the fans. I have to evolve as a fighter, and that is what essentially drives me in the sport, the evolution of myself as a fighter. So, yeah, I've matured. I take a different approach to fights than I have previously. But I like to be in exciting fights. You're correct there, as you pointed out with the, I'll call it an outburst, during the John Fitch fight, which was terribly boring for me. But yeah, I'm very different to the earlier version of myself.
Now let's talk about MVP. A lot of hype. Is the hype deserved, in your opinion?
He is a very talented fighter. He has performed extremely well in the fights that he's had. He's had those two, maybe three spectacular finishes that have kind of, you know, fogged up a few people's glasses. He's extremely creative, or his agent or his team behind him are extremely creative on social media. So he has done, in 13 fights, he's done very well for himself, and I give him credit for that. But February 16th, he will lose. He will get knocked out.
Has there been anything that he has said in this colorful build that has legitimately gotten under your skin that you're like, I'm going to make him pay for that?
Not really. I think it's, to be honest with you, I think he's childish, and I know his clutching at straws, hoping that he can get into my head, which is terribly disappointing for him and his team because he's going to end up drowning. I don't like things to get personal. I've never really got personal in any of the fights, even in the fights where I genuinely dislike the people. The fight is between myself and that person. So if ever he was to say something about someone related to me, then I think that's a bit of a step too far. But I don't suppose he'd do that, and I'm probably not reacting. It would just make it more devastating for him on February 16th.
Now, when you look at his creative style, you mentioned, it's dangerous. It's like walking into a spider web. Will it change the way you will look to attack him, knowing he can pull one of these highlight reel moves out of his ass?
One of the three that he has out of 13 fights against lesser opposition than myself. When you throw a punch, you have to throw a punch. He's not going to be doing those spider arms and dancing while he throws a punch. So, like I say, a lot of people's glasses have been fogged up. But there's this type of style, there is always an antidote to it. And, you know, it's happened in other sports. I always point to Nassim Hamed and Marc Antonio Barrera. Or if you're looking at MMA, you could say Chris Weidman and Anderson Silva. You know, some people, you can believe your hype so much and think that you can fight the same way against every opponent, and that is not the case. So we'll see what happens on February 16th, but I'm extremely confident that he's not going to win this fight.
Not to bring up past revisionist history revolving your exit from the UFC, but you're the first person I thought of when all that crap went down, UFC 229 in Las Vegas, Conor McGregor, Khabib Nurmagomedov, all the suspensions getting handed out afterwards. Brother, you got a raw deal. What was your reaction when you saw that and the punishment they got?
I'm like you say, I've changed. I'm a more mature person. I look at the sport and I look at the business, and I know that they need characters like Khabib and McGregor in order to keep generating those dollars. So I wasn't surprised of the punishments that they got, and I'm not bitter about it at all. Maybe had my career gone a different way and I was, shunned into fighting in bars and nightclubs for very little money, then I'd be a little bit bitter. But I haven't done too bad considering the mistake that I made and the punishment that I received. You know, I'm here, I'm speaking to you, I'm sat in the zone offices, I've been on ESPN. I've done well for myself out of the cage as well. My family lives a good life. You know, I'm okay. I'm okay, so I'm not bitter, and I wish both fighters, Khabib and McGregor, all the best.
My God, are you running for public office, Paul Daly? That was such a sober and respectful response. I'm impressed.
Yeah, like you say, I'm 35 now, and I'm not 36. I'm 35, and you learn.
I can totally respect that. All right, let's sum up what this fight is going to look like inside the cage when we see it Saturday night on DAZN. What can fans expect here?
What they really want to see is what they can expect, an explosive, entertaining fight. And it will be everything that they want. Okay, we'll say that.
Yes, yes. Fired the heck up. What a fantastic setup with this Bellator Welterweight World Grand Prix. And let's be honest, this was the fight that jumped off the bracket when they first put it out there. We'll find out what happens. Paul, great talking to you, man. Best of luck. Can't wait to see what happens.
Thank you. Thank you very much. Cheers, mate.
Michael Venom Page, MVP, stepping in, CBS Sports Podcast. Great to talk to you, as always, brother. How fired up are you for Saturday night?
You sound more fired up than me. I don't know. I'm about to question how fired up I should be. No, I'm excited. I'm definitely excited. It's obviously there's been a big build up. It's authentic, and I just want to get this job done now.
Well, look, we're fired up as fans and journalists, obviously, because these are the best welterweights in the world. No disrespect to Tyron Woodley, but they're in this tournament, this Grand Prix, and this is the matchup, MVP Daly, that jumped out of the bracket that we hoped we were going to see when Scott Coker was first putting this tournament together, and we weren't sure at first. Then Paul signs. Now we get it. How long have you wanted this fight? Give us the history here.
It's been a while. I first accepted the fight a couple of years ago, or just over 2 years ago, actually. When I ended up fighting Cyborg, and there was no malice, there was no animosity there at the time. I just kind of was given the opportunity, and I asked. I kind of said, "Yeah, I'll happily take that fight," and it was turned down by him. And then obviously once everything started to happen. I was just constantly asking for it. I was like, we could just get this going. I don't know what the holdup is. And there was always one kind of excuse or another on his side. But at the same time, I guess it potentially has made it what it is, and it's built up to what it is now.
And what it is a great fight. And it offers so much. We're going to find out a lot because MVP, you give us such incredible flash, highlight reel moments. But it seems like on paper, this is the big challenge. This is the one we've been waiting for. Do you feel that same way?
Not really. I feel like every time I finish a fight, my next fight is the big challenge. And then the next fight is the big challenge. And the next fight is the big challenge. When Cyborg came, everyone was like, oh, look, he's going to be up against a veteran. You know, he's going to be challenged differently. And then Caveman and this and that. It just, everyone kind of says the same thing once the opportunity's there and I'm about to fight somebody. So I feel it's exactly the same thing with Paul Daly, and I feel that way because I know what level I am in terms of my ability and what I can do in a cage. So I'm just going to keep showing people.
Where is Paul Daly at 35 right now in your eyes compared to the incredible explosive puncher we've seen throughout his career?
The fact is he's still very relevant. He's still extremely dangerous. He's anybody with that kind of power in their hands, you have to respect, regardless of whatever stage of their career they're at. They're still capable.
What were your thoughts on his loss to John Fitch watching that last May?
I joined in with him when he was booing. it was just again, stylistically, just didn't suit him. John Fitch is very good at keeping you down on the floor. There was one moment where Paul Daly potentially could have come back. I felt like he was a bit panicked and rushed after he stood up in the first round, and then just didn't have the energy or didn't have the technical ability to do anything about it again after that. But again, this is where I feel he's at a disadvantage. He is a very emotional fighter, so for him to even be carrying on the way he was carrying on during the fight kind of showed me is where he's at when he comes up against frustrating fights.
Well, you've got a lot of the flash that brings people in, but even listening to you talk right now, you can hear the underlying mental toughness that you'll need to separate yourself from the pack. Where does that come from in your eyes?
People, although I haven't been in the mixed martial arts world for a long time, I'm an extremely experienced combat artist. Like I've been fighting since I was 5 years old. So, and you learn a lot with that kind of experience. You learn a lot, and I think people kind of misunderstand. Although I'm very junior in this, just being involved in combat sports for so long, you have to wise up to what I've lost some fights that I feel like I should have won, and I've lost some fights that. I've just learned a lot from, and that was away from the cage. And now that I'm at the cage, I'm using all that experience that I've taken from those fights, and I'm just putting it in the cage now.
When people look at you at 6'3", it's like, wow, this guy's a welterweight. How the heck is this guy a welterweight? I mean, is this a weight you want that you see is perfect for you for the prime of your career? I feel like you could add muscle and go to any division you wanted to.
No, 100%. In all honesty,
when I first came in and my coach told me that, you fight welterweight at 77, I kind of started laughing because I thought he was joking. But, I after being in it for the years that I've been in it, I kind of understand why he'd want me here. And it hasn't been too much of a stress to make the weight each time. So, I'm happy to continue until I can't.
Yeah, fair enough. A lot of people waiting for seeing your charisma, seeing how exciting you are in the cage. You get it on the microphone. They tabbed you as a worldwide star from the beginning. Do you care about that stuff? I mean, I'm sure you care about cashing those checks, but does it matter to you to reach a certain Twitter following, to be known in every household in America?
No, it's nice to be, I feel like it's nice to be appreciated for, you know, the work that I put in the gym. It's a lot of work. So on that aspect, yeah, definitely. It's, cause you know, there's people out there that I could, you could name that are, you know, extremely popular, but I feel like I can offer more, I can deliver more. So it is nice to be able to get that recognition at the end of it, regardless of what that means in, financially. We as MMA fighters put a lot of work and, you know, push our bodies to some heights. So it's nice to get that back in the end.
This fight will be Mohegan Sun in Connecticut. Hey, MVP, that's my backyard. I'm not complaining. But okay. There are UK fans that are complaining. You okay with the location here? Can we put this narrative behind us?
No, for me, obviously, it was disappointing, even for myself, because it's something that I had already pictured. You know, when you see certain fights or you envision certain fights, you kind of picture the location, where it's going to be. You kind of see everything and how it's going to go. And obviously, with I've got so much more contacts in the UK. I feel like I could have done more with this show, if you know what I mean. I could have put more of a show on, and the kind of people that would have been in attendance, I feel would have been amazing. But it is what it is. I'm not gonna cry about it. It's annoying. You move on. I still got the fight that I wanted, and everyone's still gonna see it. You know, especially this amazing Sky Sports deal. All the UK fans are a lot more settled now, hearing about that they can actually be there live and follow it with me. You know, be there with me. So it's still gonna work out for the best.
You've largely dominated the opponents you've been in the cage with, but. You know, if you're going to have critics, they're going to be like, well, we got to see this guy dragged in the deep end of the pool. We got to see him fight for his life and fight through. Is there part of you as a fighter when you're on this rise that wants that too, that wants somebody to bring out the absolute very best in you?
But that's if I was to agree and say by getting, beaten up, that brings out the best in me, then I would say yes, but I don't agree with that. I put my body through a hell of a lot. I start in the most difficult scenarios in training and get beaten by some amazing athletes just so it doesn't happen in the cage. So I'm not interested in proving to everybody else that I'm able to get up from there. I train this hard and, you know, I look that good because of the way I'm training. And I make it look that easy because of the way I'm training. It doesn't just happen by fluke. So for me, I don't get paid to be dragging to the deep, and I don't get paid to be getting hit. I get paid to come in and do my job and entertain, and that's what I do.
Very fair response, of course. What do you think ultimately is the key? If you can identify one thing, why is MVP so good in that cage? Is it the timing? Is it the control of distance? What do you do that's so much more special than the rest?
I just do something that people haven't seen in the cage before, and it's just new to them. And I feel people keep making the mistake of going to karate to find out what I do, and going to taekwondo to find out what I do, and that's not what I do. I think what is special about me is freestyle kickboxing, and until they get that right, no one's really going to understand. And even when they get it right, it's still going to take them a very long time to understand what freestyle kickboxing is and how you can actually even fight against that style, because it is all of the above: the distance control, the speed, the timing. It is all of the above, and that is freestyle kickboxing.
Now, a lot of people talk about another fighter, another organization named Israel Adesanya, and I'm seeing all these memes this weekend. They're going, you know what the real dream fight one day is? MVP style bender. You hear those whispers too?
Oh, they're not whispering. Everyone's shouting that, bro. Everyone's screaming for that one. So, yeah, no, of course. But as you say, these are all fantasy fights. We can talk about multiple fantasy fights. Until there's actually, unless there will ever be kind of co-branded mixed martial arts shows, these are exactly what we say is fantasy fights.
Now, when you looked at that bracket when it first came out for this tournament, who are you expecting to see across from you in the final?
I would like it to be Rory McDonald more because of how, you know, how much he's established his name. And I feel like if, for whatever reason, he might have a bad day and, you know, let's say he loses to John Fitch and Fitch goes through, or, you know, Gracie goes through and I meet Gracie in the final and I beat them, I feel everyone will still, you know, be screaming that question and say, well, you never fought Rory McDonald. So, and you know, people kind of would excuse the fact that I am the champion at that time. The people would constantly be saying, well, you never fought that person. So I would like it to be him purely on that basis.
Now, do you think it's fair to question Rory's decision-making and taking the Gegard fight in another division before, right so close to when this tournament started?
No, not at all. One thing as athletes that we really like is to fight. If I had the opportunity to do the same and, you know, be classed as a double world champion against somebody that is as amazing as Mustasi, then I would have taken that opportunity as well. And if you know, especially if you're confident in yourself and you feel capable that you're able to do that, then 100%, I think most fighters would have taken that opportunity.
I can understand that. All right, to close here, we can't wait for it, man. We've been waiting forever. We want to see this fight. How does it end? Does it go the distance? Tell us what we're going to see on DAZN Saturday night.
You're going to see a very flamboyant, extremely over-the-top flamboyant MVP and a very frustrated Paula Tampax Daly. And through that frustration, he's going to make a critical mistake that is going to leave him on the floor and give him the realization that we are not on the same level and I am that much better than him.
I'm fired up. Yep. Right here. Check, please. I'm ready. Saturday night to DAZN MVP. Thank you for your time. Best of luck to you.
No problem. Thank you very much.
They've been talking about this fight for, what, 2 years now?
Yes.
These two have had this, like, feud just trying to make this work and getting a deal done. Just get – all I'm saying is get these dudes to the cage. Put them in the bubble wrap, seal them in the rooms, and just make sure they make it to the cage. Because if something happens between now and Saturday and this fight doesn't happen, oh, my God, our fans going to be pissed. Because they can't keep delaying the inevitable with this fight. Just pray that nothing happens. No weirdness at the weigh-ins. Just get it done.
Do not wish an exploded bottle on anybody this weekend.
Who do you like in this fight? Because I kind of got to lean towards MVP just on his youth. And I've got a lot of questions about Paul Daly's chin coming into this fight just because he's an older fighter. He's been cutting weight for a long time. I have a lot of questions on him getting through this fight healthy.
He's been through the wars. There's no question about it. Always going to have – he's 35 now. Always obviously going to have that power. But this is MVP's opportunity to be MVP. And let's not forget Paul Daly coming off a decision loss to John Fitch last May. That's not a good look. I'm sorry.
Well, that was the fight where he was against the cage because Fitch did nothing but take him down. Yes. And he was just so frustrated and bored. He was leaning over to Scott Coker. He said, "This is what you want? This is what you want. This is exciting to you."
And by the way, we could get that rematch if this tournament plays out that way. But here's the deal. MVP is that special talent, the southpaw with range, the creative striking, got a little bit of Adesanya in him, right? Got a little bit of early John Jones in him. You're seeing a lot of things you like, can really punch, can give you highlight reel kicks. He's got a dangerous banger across from him in an emotional matchup. But MVP hasn't been fighting all killers. So this is that real giant step-up opportunity. And this is a tournament that is going to give somebody a chance to really make a statement. We said in the beginning when this tournament first got announced, this could end up being MVP's like star making turn here. This is opportunity here. I think he's going to win this. I think he needs to win this. And the winner, fighting that winner of that Rory McDonald, the champion, coming back against John Fitch. So we could see MVP Rory in the semis? Unless they pull a backstage. No, I'm sorry. That's the wrong side of the bracket. So that's setting up to be what could be the best final possible, right? MVP Rory McDonald is potentially the best final possible. The winner of Paul Daly MVP is going to fight Douglas Lima, who beat Koreshkov in their trilogy. Damn, there's a lot to love in this tournament.
The welterweights of Bellator are second to none, man. It's unbelievable how good and strong that division is. I'm just so glad that Scott Coker took the heavyweight model and made it into the welterweight model.
I mean, if we end up with MVP Rory, that's fan-friggin-tastic. And that's no disrespect to Neiman Gracie, who's on the other side of that bracket.
But I think they did that on purpose because they want the final to potentially be MVP fighting for the belt against Rory. They don't want him to win the belt in like the semis and then have to defend it.
Which you certainly can, and we've done it before, call out Rory, like, what are you doing fighting Gegard Mousasi before entering this tournament? You can even go as far as saying, why are you in this tournament? You're the champion, but it's going to increase our entertainment ability here. Is there a fear here that if MVP is not the real deal and catches that fade, that the hype train is over? And I know people bounce back from these type of losses, but Bellator is in a very interesting spot here. Homegrown Michael Venom Page, homegrown Aaron Pico. Look like we were, you know, this is what we always said. Can they produce their own stars? Can we have a few Michael Chandlers, not just one? Pico sent to hell in the last one. MVP gets hit, it gets clipped here. This is not a great look for Bellator's future, which they've invested a ton in.
Yeah, I just think, I don't know. I feel like he's going to be able to bounce back if something like that does happen. I just think he's too flashy to not. I don't know. I don't think this is as dangerous as we're making it out to be. I don't think Daly has it anymore, and I don't think he's going to catch that fade. I think it's pretty, that's as easy as I can say it.
I like him to Page to win spectacularly here. This is an opportunity. We have some washed heavyweights to talk about on the rest of this card. Are you guys moved at all by the idea of Czech Congo, Vitaly Minnikov, the former Bellator champion, or Mirko friggin' Krokop, are you kidding me? Against Roy Nelson's beard? Wow.
Just, Brian, you gotta hit it. Wash me. Wash me with this.
Wow. Yeah.
I'm sorry. This is just old guys at the bar. Hey, let's go outside and fight kind of events. Like, I'm very excited for this. I think Czech Congo, by the way, sneaky good resume the last few fights. A lot of knockouts in there, a lot of early knockouts. That's a really good fight for him against the guy who was forced to vacate the Bellator heavyweight title for being inactive. But he's still undefeated. Like, Vitaly Minnikov is undefeated as a heavyweight, and that's a good fight. That's a good co-main event for Bellator to have in that spot. I think Minnikov probably wins, but I want to see it. And Krokop coming off of an ACL injury where he was supposed to fight Roy Nelson in the first – was it the first round of that tournament or was it before the heavyweight tournament? I can't remember.
It was before.
So he was – yeah, he was supposed to fight him before, and then he had a crazy ACL injury that he's been recovering from. I forgot that he was on this card to begin with, and then when I was looking at it last night, I was like, oh my God, that's right. He's coming back.
There's so many layers to Krokop here. 44, of course, he knocked out Roy Nelson at UFC 137 in 2011. I'm sorry, he got knocked out by Roy Nelson. Let me take that back. And that was during a stretch when Krokop was kind of getting sent to hell, had been KO'd in consecutive fights by Frank Mir, Brendan Schaub, and then Big Country. And since then, he's 10-1. He's 10-1 since that Roy Nelson KO loss. Since 2012, Mirko Krokop is 10-1. Fountain of youth? No. Drugs. Let's be honest. This man should not be fighting in the United States on a major MMA card. Was sentenced after his final UFC bout, which was a win over Gabriel Gonzaga, a TKO win in 2015. Got the 2-year ban from USADA. What did he do? Went to Japan, fought Rizin, never served the damn suspension. Scott Coker kind of has his hands in the air like, what do you want me to do here? I don't know. Maybe not put this guy on the card. In the end, pick your own side on drugs. Maybe we don't care in reality. Maybe we want drugged up former names, right? Bellator is, the retirement home for these guys, South Florida. So, you know, just enjoy it. Enjoy the, Big Country Krokop rematch there.
Isn't that Rizin fight when he fought King Mo?
Yeah, I second round TKO. I get on King Mo about that, and say, look, you gotta run that back. I don't care if it's in the streets. Run that thing back, alright? Bring USADA with
when,
you.
when Krokop was probably about 260 and King Mo was what, 190 maybe?
Yes. Man, Krokop turned pro in 2001. I mean, it's 44.
This is the best win streak of his career.
Okay, here's a crazy thought. If he stops Roy Nelson and avenges this loss, is he going to fight Ryan Bader for the Bellator Heavyweight Championship? Like, what is happening here?
God, I hope not.
He has five first-round finishes in this 9-5 win streak that he's on. And then they're all stoppages after that.
So we're either after this fight going to be saying he needs to retire, or we're going to be questioning the drug testing on the Mohegan Sun casino grounds, or we're going to say because of drug testing, he's washed and he should go. So there's going to be a lot of hot takes coming out of this fight.
If he wins, run that Fedor's fight again. Just do that until eternity.
Okay, that's actually brilliant matchmaking. If you're Scott Coker, you go back to Fedor. You go, I got one more for you, brother. We run back all those we bring back all the footage from back in the day when they fought in that biggest heavyweight fight in the history of the sport. Yes, yes, yes. That's how you do it. I need some of that washness inside of me. Eric Silva, former UFC guy, is going to be on this card in a welterweight bout against Yaroslav Amosov. But you know what, Brandon? Nothing else to see here.
Nope. That's about it. We got more stuff to talk about
for
Sunday.
Let's wrap the show with the big one here. And that's Sunday night, UFC on ESPN 1. The big one. Not the Dam Plus, not the Deuce, not ESPNU. It's on the big one from Phoenix, Arizona, Talking Stick Resort Arena. Heavyweights, former title challenger Francis Ngannou, fresh off that get well win, right? Destroyed Curtis Blaydes, going in against former champion Cain Velasquez, the guy who I'm fairly comfortable in saying is the greatest heavyweight in UFC history. Not a greater heavyweight all time than Fedor, of course. Injuries have ravaged his career, but I've watched UFC since day one. This is the best heavyweight I've ever seen, guys. 2 years since he sent Travis Brown to the deep, dark depths at UFC 200, breaking another long layoff at that point. First round finish. He back. And I don't even think he was hurt in the last year, right? We thought it was contract issues. He tells Ariel Helwani of ESPN it was more like he was just raising his kids. He was just chilling. It's hard to ever get a read on Cain. Never became the star he had the potential to. Doesn't have it. Got the Brown Pride tat. Doesn't have the it factor. But man, can this guy fight? And Brandon Wise, here's why you have to love UFC matchmaking. He ain't getting insert easy and washed heavyweight name here. He getting Francis Ngannou coming off of a win. This is fun. This is going to be fantastic.
Yeah, he's not getting Stefan Struve or our boy Andre Arlovsky. He's getting the top of the food chain. He's getting a legitimate striking challenger in Francis Ngannou. You could even say that Travis Brown fight 2 years ago, his last fight, that was kind of a soft matchup just to see if he still had it. And he overperformed expectations there. Wasn't that when he threw the spinning heel kick off of the cartwheel heel kick?
He was nasty that night. He had everything. He had the timing. He had the speed and explosion. I mean, I was ready at that point for him to make a run at the title again. I mean, it looked like he was back. He back, brother. Now he's 36.
Yeah, my hope for him is that he doesn't look his age. He has some of the tools left, but he still has the power. Because if he doesn't have the power in those hands still, that I don't know how to feel about him in this heavyweight era, because if you can't knock these dudes out, you're going to gas quick. And I still have no idea what his gas tank looks like.
The power's not leaving him. I mean, the power's the last thing to go. I think if anything, you're talking gas tank at this point.
I mean, but he was cardio Cain.
That's the thing.
That was his. So we need to see him go the full five rounds, I think. Right? I don't want to see him quick knockout, because then we still have questions. We don't know what's still, like, we'll still know the power's there, but we won't know what the rest of his game looks like.
Here's why this matchup rules, okay? Because there is the danger, if he's a little bit rusty or whatever, that Francis Ngannou just straight up catches him. I mean, that's Francis Ngannou. I mean, it's just sickening, the first round explosion in power. But at the same time, he could have one of those wins against Ngannou that Stipe had in their title bout last January, where it's all about taking him down and ground and pound, and we spend 4.5 rounds going, oh, man, Cain still got it. Who's going to outwork cardio Cain? Who's going to get up when he takes you down? Oh, man, if only Cain and DC would fight each other, we'd find out who really is the best heavyweight in history. We're going to have those conversations. So This is dangerous, yet it's also perfect matchmaking in a guy who has remedial levels on the ground. And Ngannou can say all he wants about what he's working on, what he's improving. I don't know if you're ever going to teach him how to be anything but remedial on the ground. That's why this fight is fun. But I just want to pause right here and say, like, I know it's a career for Cain that's been ravaged by injuries. We never got to see how great he is. But at 36, look, it's a division where people age late. The window's still there. He's 14-2 in his career. He made his UFC debut in his third pro fight. His losses both have explanations and stories with them, right? Had that really bad knee injury in the first UFC on Fox fight in 2011. Gets knocked out by Junior Dos Santos in over a minute. Comes back and redeems it twice. And then, of course, we know 2015 loses the title in the elevation of Mexico City to Verdum. He also was not at 100%. We've never seen this guy, when he's at 100%, be anything but the best heavyweight we've ever seen inside of this promotion. There's still time, right? There's still time for this guy to have the career we always thought and wanted and thought he could. And he may end up having a longer career as an elite because he took the time off and doesn't have the damage acquired.
It's crazy to me that he only had 16 fights. Like, he's been in the game for this long, and he's only been in 16 professional fights. And like you said, he started in UFC with his third.
UFC 83 was his debut.
Like, that's crazy that he's here still, and he's only going to be in his 17th pro fight.
And how, like, crazy is it that in 14 pro fights, he's got two wins over JDS, won the title from Lesnar, beat Big Nog, and has two wins over a prime Bigfoot Silva. Like, that ain't bad. That's not a bad resume, bros.
I just want, like I said, I want to see it. I just want to see what this looks like now at 36 with a year off of just kind of staying out of the sport for a minute. I think he kind of did what is his name? Jorge Masvidal told me he did, where he just kind of took a year to recharge the batteries, to stay out of the sport, stay out of the gym for a while, just, like you said, hang out with his family, enjoy that family time that he probably wasn't having before. And I want to see what he looks like now that he's like, all right, I got one more shot to make a run at this title. I'm going to go do this now. This is my time. I want to see what this fight looks like. I personally was telling Mikey before we started recording, I kind of think Francis wins.
What?
But it's because of the knockout power. That one punch power that Francis has shown us he has against, like, Alistair Overeem and the other guys he had on the way up. I think Cain wins, but if I was betting, the underdog money on Francis Ngannou looks pretty nice.
I mean, he's always going to be a live dog. And look, he looked really good in that Blades rematch in terms of getting it out of his system. 45-second knockout in Beijing, that did not go to the ground. But then again, we don't know what would happen if it had gone to the ground. And if so, I don't know, man. This feels like perfect matchmaking to present the danger, but to really set up Velasquez to look fantastic. What are we worried about from him here? Just 3 minutes.
Well, you
want to
see what I want to see what the chin looks like. I want to see what his chin looks like.
I don't think you're even going to get a chance to. We were talking about it before the fight, like Brandon said, and Brian, after what you said, I might be fully all in on Cain winning via first round TKO. I think he takes him down and just ground and pounds him until it's over. You know, like, Ngannou didn't really look great against Stipe when Stipe was wrestling him, and Cain is a different type of beast. You see those videos that him and DC are in where they're going at wrestling practice, and I don't know. I could just see him taking him down, putting him up against the fence, and just kind of grounding him into a TKO win.
Cain's for real. This Cain-Stipe fight that we're already trying to book for the championship that apparently DC is going to give up, that we've just told him he is, that's going to be that was the fight we always wanted the last few years when Stipe was building this resume, and we're like, hold on, Cain's better than him. We know this to be true. We need to find this out to be so. Yeah, let's not count it before it hatches. We need Cain to still be Cain in there and not, you know, get caught cold here. But great matchmaking, and let's be honest, a really fun card here. Before we break into this card, it's prediction time. I think Velasquez gets the stoppage. I think it's a little bit later. I think Francis is going to show a lot of fight. I think it's a early fourth round TKO stoppage. What do you got for me, Wise?
I'm going to go third round stoppage for Cain, because he's going to see. So this is the only reason I brought up the Francis stuff is just because I think he is going to land some shots that we're going to be like, whoa, that seemed to bother Kane. He didn't seem to like getting hit in the face or getting hit in the stomach that way. I think you're going to see a little bit more vulnerability just because of the age, and we want to see if he still has the speed. But at the end of the day, I do think that Kane's power and his overall maturity in the cage is going to prove out to be the winner here. And I think he's going to be able to finish Francis in the third round just with that cage experience, all of his maturity and all of his experience, his skill set. He's just such a more complete fighter than Francis is. So, yeah, I agree with that. I think he finishes him off in the third round. Go ahead, Mikey.
I'll stick with round one because I already said it. But I could see him taking him down and kind of just ground and pounding him. But 3 and 4, that sounds perfect also. You know, I could just see him just breaking Ngannou like that with just a ground and pound and wrestling. And Ngannou eventually giving up, maybe giving up his neck or something, or just kind of burying his head until the ref stops it.
Yeah, that's a way to go out without tapping, right? Because BJ Penn said only a bitch taps out on strikes. Remember he told GSP that? So, yeah, I think that's how you do it when you do want to tap out. So, look at this card, guys. There's really no, like unreal second fight, but there's, like, 8 fights I care about a ton, right? Like, this co-main event, James Vick coming off of that knockout loss, going up against Paul Felder at lightweights. Hell yeah! Like, yeah!
That's just such a great matchup of two dudes who just want to go and brawl. Like, Paul Felder is coming off a loss, but it was to Mike Perry, and we love that fight! Paul Felder and Mike Perry threw down for 15 minutes, man.
Felder had the broken arm? Felder fought through a ton in that fight.
Yeah, and if they're both healthy going into this, they're going to swing and trade for 15 minutes, and it's going to be amazing. I'm so excited to see what this fight looks like. I want to see how Vic looks after that loss because he sounded like a broken dude after he lost that fight against Justin Gaethje. I want to see if he can bounce back and look okay.
You know, he didn't get his backbone broken in that fight. He just got caught. So I'm, you know, for a long, tall guy like this in this division at lightweight, you hope he's not going to be a guy who's going to end up being a pinata target because he doesn't move his head enough or he just has the body where he's going to be, you know, going to be there for the hit. And he needs to come back and make a statement that he deserves, you know, to swim with the sharks. And this is the best, deepest division. So a lot on him in this fight. Felder's obviously solid. So this is not a tough matchup by any means. We're going to see violence. I even really like Courtney Casey, Cynthia Calvillo at women's strawweight. You know, there was a point where Calvillo was like Brandon Wise's sleeper fighter of the year a couple of years ago, and you were ready to crown her already in a division that didn't exist.
Yeah, I think she's going to – this is kind of a coming out party for her just because she is finally coming off of that suspension from USADA, the 9 months for marijuana, which, again, just the dumbest things in the world. This is a good matchup for her to be able to show off her skill set because she is that submission specialist, and she will be able to take you down to the ground and do whatever she needs to because she is a master of her craft on the wrestling. And I'm very excited that she's finally back. And this is kind of that softer matchup because Courtney Casey is like 8-6 in her career, but Cynthia can get into that title picture pretty quickly. I think at strawweight, if she continues to make this meteoric rise, like she was on before, I think she can make this happen. And I think she's going to be up there pretty quickly.
What else jumping out to you on this card? I mean, look, I like weird.
I know where you're going. I know where you're going.
All the way down to that ESPN Plus early preliminary card main event. My boy, the Baron, he's back. Guys, look, this guy's not even 30 years old. Has anyone been washed this early? Has anyone taken a bigger fall from grace ever than Henan Burrell? From pound for pound king, according to Dana White, to like this run of death, but he's still my boy. I still have the green t-shirt that I won in a bet from Brandon Wise that I wear all the damn time. It's Baron time, bantamweight on Saturday against Luke Sanders, who only really is most known for being Becky Lynch of WWE's boyfriend over the past year. They're broken up now, but this is interesting. I like the Baron to come back. He's 32. I'm sorry. He's 32, but he looks like he's 40 in there. Dude, he's lost 6 of 8. 6 of 8, man, since that.
And Sanders has lost 3 of 4, so something's got to give.
Yeah, this is a get-well opportunity here for the Baron. We need him back, guys. This cannot end like this, all right? Please, please. I'm looking for fireworks in there because Henan Burrell, I don't know if the defense is gone. Is this a USADA thing? Faber was on the show saying it was a USADA thing. Either way, that guy fell off the damn cliff, and now he takes a lot of punishment in there. Let's get a statement win. Come on. Team Burrell, you with me?
He needs it. I will get on your team for this fight because if he doesn't win this fight, I feel like UFC's cutting him. Like, get the hell out of here kind of fight. The other one that I'm looking forward to is the preliminary main event, which I don't understand why it's not on the main card. I get if you're trying to just push more people to get interested in it before the start of the main card at 9 o'clock or 7 o'clock. I don't remember. But Jimmy Rivera against Aljamain Sterling is a great fight. Jimmy Rivera had that flash knockout against Marlon Moraes, who we talked about last week, is now in title contention because he knocked Jimmy Rivera out and then Rafael Assuncao. But Aljamain Sterling has made a career turn here where he is starting to look like he's got that demeanor where he can make a move here at bantamweight if he continues to win these big-name fights and get in these marquee events. I like this matchup. I think this is probably the third best fight on the card in terms of style matchmaking. And I think Aljamain probably finishes off Jimmy Rivera here.
Wow, you're ready to write off Jimmy Rivera. He had like a 55-fight win streak there. And we see him lose once to Moraes, and you're like, yeah, that's it, he's done. No, look, this is a big opportunity for Jimmy Rivera to remind us who he is and that he's in this title discussion in this division, not the deepest division ever. Big opportunity. They're going to bang. This is going to be fun. Man, look, there's so many damn storylines on this card. I mean, this is Cron Gracie's debut. Hicks and Son, 4-0, UFC debut, going up against Alex Caceres, which is a guy that flashy but can be beat. I think we're getting the tap out, right? Hicks and by armbar, you can make a t-shirt out of that. How about Cron by submission? I'm ready for that. I'm ready. Look, it's going to be like that forever. I come from that time. If your name is Gracie, I will care about you. Even if you're Neiman Gracie in Bellator and your last name isn't actually Gracie, but you throw it on there anyway because you're loosely related, I will follow and love you.
I can't believe Cron's 30. That's kind of crazy. Yeah. And this is his UFC debut. Bruce Leroy, baby.
That's what I'm talking about. We got, look, there's a quiet banger here in Vicente Luque, Brian Barberina. Those guys come there to knock blocks off. And, dude, touchy-feely and Miles Jury at featherweight to open up that main card. Again, these are services I want to have. I'm in this battle.
They did a very good job of stacking this first ESPN card. And I just really hope everything lives up to the expectations that we've given it. Because if we come back here next Monday and it wasn't that great, it's going to be sad. I'm going to be disappointed if this all ends up being gross decision wins for everybody.
It'll be very interesting to see coming back next week and seeing how the Bellator 2 fights compare to this UFC 1 fight, because you saw at the beginning of those Bellator fights, like you said, like there are some guys on there that don't have a pro fight or have had less, like there were a bunch of guys that had less than 10 pro fights on those two cards. And then you look at this ESPN card and you see a lot of names. Well, they may not be top tier names, but these are guys that are well established in the UFC. There's not many fighters. I see one fighter on there that has 3 professional fights, and I believe that's the least. So it's kind of the exact opposite. So it'll be interesting to see how they both play out and how it works, how you see both concepts work.
Just as interesting it'll be if Kane wins, man. We're going to have some fun heavyweight conversations next week on where we go, how we book this damn territory moving forward. Hey, Brando, this guy Mikey Mormont joining the team here. This is good fun and games here. I like this combat audio.
It's a good first run for him. I think he held his own.
How's his functional BJJ? Have you taken him on the mats yet at ATT? You're in an ATT. You and Dan Lambert are Eskimo bros at this point.
I'm waiting for him to bring me down there so I can learn some moves.
He wants to catch that Arlovsky smoke.
Bully beatdown episode all over again. There you go. Follow us on State of Combat on Twitter. Mikey, can they follow you anywhere? Follow you around the streets?
MJMCBSI on Twitter.
That's what we're talking about.
Give out the occasional UFC pick.
Yes, yes.
Yeah, he's gonna keep bragging about how great his picks are every time that he comes on the show now.
Brandon did it for me. I didn't have to today.
Who won our 2018 picks battle? I did not have the best year in UFC.
The same person who won the 2017 one.
By one pick on both of them.
What did it come down to?
You actually finished last, by the way, last year.
Well, I'm an emotional investor.
We'll scrub that. We'll scrub that from the audio. You can't say that. We didn't hear that.
I am a very emotional picker, okay?
Mikey won by one pick last year because of my boy, Beefy Latifi. That's what it came down to. Corey Anderson against Beefy Latifi decided our fate.
All right. I'm in on that. Beefy Latifi ruined it for you. I remember when that happened. All right, hey, follow me at BCampbellCBS, BrandonY65. Enjoy the fights this weekend, loaded weekend. Come over to Brandon Wise's house. His dog will bite you in the cheek. It'll be fantastic. And that'll do it this week. Brandon, anything else to say to the people?
We out.